talk first.
October 9, 2014,
F-POMP. Find out who's on the phone, and then we'll go around the room because everybody's still finding their seats a little bit here, snacking on Tammy's goodies. Thanks, Bill. Who else do we have on the phone?
Tom Iverson with the
IDM.
Tom Iverson with... Okay. Okay. And I think I heard Carl Duggar.
Right.
Hi, Carl. Got anybody from the Nez Perce? Anybody from the Colvilles? Anybody from Critvic?
Tom's not going to be here.
Okay. Anybody from...
He's out of the band right now.
Who just joined? Chris? Okay, hi, Chris. Anybody from Idaho Fish and Game? Oregon?
This is Catherine Cossel from Oregon.
Good morning, Catherine. Anybody from Washington? Okay, why don't we go around the room and let them know who all is here. And you want to start maybe, John?
John Versus, Corps of Engineers.
Bob Cordy, Corps of Engineers, Dallas.
Miro Zindel, John Daydow.
Scott Building, Corps of Engineers.
Wall Wall, Mr. Corps of Engineers.
Has joined the conference.
Ed Rick, Corps of Engineers, Michael.
Nathan Zorich, Army Corps.
Robert Stansel, Corps of Engineers.
John Daly, Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla.
Gary Fredericks, NOAA.
Bob Wertheimer, Corps of Engineers.
Christine Peterson, BPA.
Agnes Lute, BPA.
Ann Setter, Corps. Okay, so that's our group today. I think the first thing that we generally do is ask if anybody had any issues with the August or September FPOM minutes. Otherwise, we'd like a thumbs up to approve those. I hear no noise. I will assume that that's an approval. Looks like we have one more person for those on the phone that just joined us, being Dave Wills.
I had to stop for caffeine. I'm sorry.
So.
Okay.
First thing.
3 minutes.
Sherry, here's Tom. I'll try to get off on the phone.
Okay, Sherry. Has anybody else joined us since we did our round robin here in the room? Okay, we're going to go ahead with the agenda then. The first item is the action items, and Walla Walla, Carl.
I'm joining the conference.
Good morning, Charles.
Hey, good morning, Charles.
We're just starting. That's Ann. It's Ann and Tammy are your happy co-chairs to lead the meeting today. Smiley face. Keep trying to be the hardcore schedule that we get whipped into when we have some of the other folks here, but we're ready to go. So, Carl, the first action item for Walla Walla was one that, are you prepared to talk about that yet? That's the McNary.
I am, sure. I've been going over it. We just got it a few days ago. This document overall just covers the juvenile collection channel and the major systems in it and makes a number of important recommendations, most of which we actually agree with. There's a couple areas I think we have some concerns about in there, but it basically calls for restoring the existing system that we have and not developing any new system like a fail-safe channel and everything. And given the limitations of the channel, that's probably pretty much what we're going to have to live with. It would be extremely difficult and expensive to install a fail-safe system, for example, such as they have in the new Bonneville, I like to call it the new Bonneville powerhouse. It's almost 30 years old now, but regardless, the existing system we have actually works pretty well. There are a few problems, the biggest problem being the transition brush, but we don't really feel that thing is necessary anyway. We'd like to just get rid of it rather than try to fix an old system. But NOAA looks like they've got a really pretty
guess my understanding, I had a brief discussion but got cut off because of the travel and the BlackBerry with Dave, your OPM yesterday, is that Dave is not yet happy with the scoping effort, that he feels it's complete and has addressed all the issues.
Right, yeah. We have a number of issues. In fact, before this meeting, I was put together my comments, and I have Bobby's comments from yesterday. He didn't have a chance to go over it in depth before he left his office for the next 2 days, but I have his comments, and I'm working through it. I'll be working with Dave, too, for the final coordinated comments on the thing.
So I think for FPOM, the interest is in these mechanical screen systems, Carl, and what you've been trying to describe here, I'm not sure that it is very clear to them because it's quite a few other alternatives. What I'd like to focus on today, and we can have further discussion in the future, is they did receive a scope to look at the three screen systems, and one of the things they'd evaluated is whether or not you should rehab them or just replace them. And when I spoke with Dave, who's the OPM out there yesterday, he's a little concerned that they say go in and just rehab them because the cost roughly will be about 75% of just replacing them. And with our limited in-water work window, a little bit of concern whether we can really take them out, send them off, get them back, and be ready for the next season. So we're going to be working through that, I think, in the next week or two. Our hope is if we need to go through plans and specs this year, and we do have some funding set aside to do that for these so that we would be ready to implement. If it turns out that we're going to try to only just go out and purchase, we can look at the cost and see whether we could maybe substitute that. And so actually, one of the things that Dave was concerned about that you're aware of is that there's some other longer-term decisions taking place, right, and would like to get through
that
meeting next Tuesday, and then we will have kind of a discussion on these issues. So I think we could probably give
next
a better...
Tuesday?
Yeah, that's when you're coming
it
over.
It is. Yeah, okay, so you're talking... Okay.
So that we can push this out from that standpoint. But
okay.
Bigger picture, to me... there's two issues at McNary that we're trying to address as very high priority. One of them is reliability of these screen cleaning systems in the JFF. The other is effective debris removal systems. So just for everyone's information, we are trying to see if we can't get a log bronc, which is what's been borrowed from Lower Granite in previous years, this year, which would allow us to clear out the McNary Forebay in a more timely manner.
Okay.
And we're hoping to get that taken care of in 2015. So that will open up some new options for us in terms of debris control. That said, reliability of the screens has been an ongoing problem, and Carl referred to one other element just before we close that, and that is the discussion of whether the one screen really needs a mechanical screen sweep or whether people could agree that air bursts are effective enough. And so I think we might want to have that either as a possibly a separate little mini meeting, Carl, or at least go through a little bit more of a formal presentation on it.
That
for
would be good. Yeah, I guess
so let's kick that one at least to the next meeting to try to put together just a little bit of what this looks like, how it works, and where you'd like to go versus just rehabbing it.
Yeah, let's go over the history and some of the problem that we're dealing with here, too, because not everybody's...
Yeah, no, I don't think so, and I don't think just coming in as an update on a report is that we're ready.
No,
this is... The project would like to just get rid of the transition screen brush. It hasn't worked since I've been here, even before I got here, probably really not consistency in the last 10 years, and yet we've gotten by fine without it. Part of the reason we've gotten by is that the Vogler system actually covers the upstream part of the transition screen, so it's never been a problem. And also, it's only about, I think, 7% of the screen area. It's not a very big area.
So, are you agreeable maybe to next? In November, putting together a little bit more information, either a presentation or a handout that will describe, you know, get yourself a drawing, let's put in perspective how that's a part of our system, and let's be able to have a little bit more detailed conversation on that.
That sounds like a great idea. I can come up with some pretty good graphics here hopefully to put something together. We have some good grounds in here.
Okay, I think that would be at least a place to continue discussion before anybody makes any.
Yeah, I might have some time on Tuesday to actually go down there and take a look at some of this stuff and talk to about it too.
Okay. Anybody else have any comments on that, or shall we move on? Chris, I hear you're on the phone. The next one was an update on lower granite temperature improvements. These are the long-term improvements that are scheduled to occur during FY15 to address the temperature issues in the adult ladder. You had it due out, Chris. You want to speak up to that at this point?
Yeah, Mark Smith, I believe, is on, and Ryan was going to get on too, but the basic is that the revised MLC should be done by the end of the day. I was awaiting some final information from Elizabeth on timing of bringing the ladder down and back up, you know, as the off-season away from the wintertime. You know, we need to turn the AWS off, you know, up to 24 hours before we actually dewater the ladder. And we may have to throttle the feeder 14 to move fish out of the ladder before we get a diver in. We're still looking at basically some flexibility in the contract where we'd like to be able to finish the whole thing in 3 days. So the contract's not going to be out, and we don't know what they're going to propose in the contract schedule-wise, because we won't know until next February. But we have to give them a 2-3 day periods with at least 3 days in between to bring the ladder back up in order for us to have, you know, total confidence that they can complete the full project. Now, we're going to prioritize the diffuser 14 chimney first because we have benefits to operating the trap if we have the chimney in first. So we'd like to still do it like the second week of June. Seems the best time for fish to do it. We probably start on a Tuesday, which I think is the 9th of June. Bring the ladder down, bring the ladder back up on Friday through Sunday or Monday, then bring the ladder back down again if we think we're going to need to bring the ladder back down again. But there may be some incentives that they may propose that talking to dive coordinators, they may be able to do this with dual crews in, you know, 1-3 day period, or by swap over to 4 day period.
So the only question I have in what I heard you say, Chris, is that your work period might be, you're going to try to keep it to 3 and maybe a possible need for a 4th. What about the AWS off that you referred to earlier? Are we also talking then an additional front end day where we might not be able to be providing passage?
Yeah, after the wintertime, I'm trying to work out with Elizabeth that, you know, that's the attraction of the fish in there, so we limit the number of fish that we actually have to salvage for bringing the ladder down. And that's typically the procedure they do for the winter dewater, where they dewater the whole system. We may be able to start that at dark the night before, and then, you know, 6 o'clock the next morning actually bring the ladder down. So
that sounds like what you discussed last month was the 3 days down, and then with the possibility that you might not be able to get all the work done, even though that's your intent. I guess when I had Mark, I know you're on the phone, one of the concerns, Mark's the project manager, and when they've scoped out the amount of dive work, what he told me is that they're looking at 60 to 70 hours, you know, if everything goes well of dive work. You know, that's pretty challenging in 3 24-hour periods. So I think people just need to be aware of that as we're moving forward here.
Yeah, the contingency is to bring it back up and then bring it back down if we need to, and from what we know until we get a schedule from a contractor, we'll probably need to, but we do have some work from dive coordinators that they may be able to put two crews in there diving side by side. We don't need to turn unit one off, and it isn't scheduled to go off for any repairs until that following September. So as long as they desire to stay south of Monolith 3, which is into the parking lot right there, we won't have to turn any turbine units off. Typically, we have about four turbine units operating at a time, but it fluctuates between 2 and 6. So we could have full powerhouse. That modifies the velocities.
Our participants have joined the conference.
Up to 3 or 4 knots, you know, over the dive area, mm-hmm. and they can't dive, you know, in that condition, or wind causes that or whatever, so we have to have that contingency as well for the extra 3 days if needed, so.
Great. That was going to be my question, Chris, the Cygnus, so thank you for bringing that up.
So I guess do we have an action here where you're needing a decision from FPOM today in terms of endorsing that 3-day work window that you've just mentioned, the 9th to the 12th?
Well, the sooner the better, so we can put, I mean, if we have a date range, we'd like to put actual dates in for the bid to the contractor so they can kind of schedule around that instead of totally leaving it up to them. So, I mean, yes, it'd be nice to, you know, have something as soon as we can.
Is that something where, since I wasn't at the last meeting, has everyone had a chance to review the adult passage data? Is there any concerns from anyone in terms of June 9 to 12 having this outage as the best time for this work to occur?
Well, Aaron, I think we need some flexibility in the contract. Just as we talked about last month, is if we're getting, I guess you said that unit one can be on, is if there was a concern about hitting the freshet and having to wait a week for that to come down so we couldn't turn off any turbines. So I guess that you're saying there's doubt that you think you could do it even if the full powerhouse.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think we'll have full powerhouse. If we need to divert some over to, you know, spill by the fish passage plane power or whatever, then we're just going to have to do that at that time. I don't think against the wall there over, you know, south of Monolith 3, they're going to get any dive unless you get some, you know, weather system that comes in and just blows the whole surface water all over the place or something. You know, so there is some contingency. Right now, the contract, what we're putting out basically gives them a time frame. I think it gives them a 10-day window or whatever to
okay.
do, you know, 2-3-day dives if needed.
Yeah.
We have the flexibility for them to propose to us that they can get it done in 3 days safely. You know, we're getting some indication that may be doable, but it's going to take a lot of divers, which is going to be a lot more money, so.
So I guess the question I have is, if we think this is the best time, do you think it would cost you more to introduce flexibility into the contract than if you just had to do a mod for a few days once the contract was awarded?
This is Mark Smith. I believe so. If we put that mod in, if we do the flexibility, it limits the contractor when he can get out there, or he needs to get out there ahead of time to be ready for it, and it will cost more.
So if we could tentatively agree that based on average data for the last 10 years that this date range should put us in a window of least concern for adult passage, your preference would be to have everyone for let's go around and see if everyone can agree. And then if we have an unusual year and circumstances that make everyone very uncomfortable as we get close, they could come back and ask for a mod, and that would be your preferred route forward is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, as long as that mod comes sometime before. I don't want to do it a week before it needs to get done. We need to get a contract for some reasonable timing.
Right, so I guess...
Yeah, but then, you know, if we know a month ahead of time, oh man, this looks bad, so she changes a week or so, that's very doable.
And the BCOE is like, what, 23rd or 22nd
now. This month, yeah.
It's this month, so I think people would probably want to see the revised MOC with actual dates and process on it.
Right.
And then, you know, verify that tentative if you get one today or not. You know, I think you'd probably want to see that for sure to get some comfort level. Then, you know, give them a week or something to get back to us with a confirmation.
Okay, so why don't we go around with the reps we have on the phone? We've had some other reps join in the interim and just see where we stand in terms of agreement. You know, Bill, you were talking before. Do you think you could agree with that?
Yeah, we're okay with that. With the plan, huh?
Okay. Let's see, in the room we have Fish and Wildlife Service. Do you want, or BPA? Are either of you guys ready to comment?
I'm going to defer to the WISE assessment of mule fisheries.
Okay. BPA, you want to?
I want to take a look at the MOC that comes out. I think they're. I'm hearing that it likely will not impact turbine units, but there may be some potential. So I just want to take a look at
the MOC.
Okay, so that was Agnes, and Agnes would like to review Chris's MOC for some assurance that the units would not be affected by this outage at that time of year, and if so, the magnitude of that effect. So that would mean that getting your MOC out by late today, Chris, would be timely. We could then get it out here as quickly as we can out of the office, and I'm thinking that your BCOE being the 23rd, that means that we could give folks a week, you know, to review this revised MOC, and then they would need to give us final comments if they have them at that time. In the interim, since we were going around, let's continue with those that were on the phone, just so if we have a feel for where we may be headed. Let's see, I think I heard Oregon. I heard Catherine. Are you there to speak for Oregon?
Yeah, so we'll look at the revised MLC and get comments back. Eric's out this week, and he will probably want to have a chance to look at that before we make comments.
Okay. Charles?
What I was saying, that understanding and confirmation that if we have a late runoff and a lot of water, that still is an option. I'd like to be sure that that is confirmed. That and I would like to use the final MOC, but at this point in time, I would say, yeah, look, I'm not uncomfortable with the process you've identified.
Okay, and I know, let's see, I think we heard Tom Iverson and we heard Sherry. Either of you want to comment?
This is Sherry. I'd like to see the revised MOC, but, you know, I don't really have any problem. I would like to ensure that we do have some flexibility if it's not run off here.
Okay, Tom?
Yeah, we're not ready to comment on it yet.
Okay, I think we can move on from that action item unless anybody has any more comments.
Russ.
Hello, Russ.
Oh, Russ, I can hear you.
I want to hear what Ida is.
Sorry,
this
Russ.
Fish.
We do have a question to report to the
are you going to sway the whole group?
You got enough time yesterday, Russ.
Well, that's a good point. Maybe we should cut him off.
Go ahead, Russ. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's one where we want the work done. We're struggling on this period, and it is a lower Chinook half-inch period. No steelhead or sockeye really showing up yet. So it's good for sockeye and steelhead, but the Chinook's got concern for us with this period, and there is no good period outside of the winter work window.
Yeah.
But it's summer Chinook, and, you know, a couple of things. One, we had a storm event really impact our broodstock this year for hatchery summer Chinook in the South Fork. And then also our summer Chinooks are challenging fisheries because they come into rivers when they're low and clear. And so the fishery is a real tough one to manage. And so this period that's being proposed, and I understand why, but it is kind of like right in the heart of the summer Chinook passage of Lower Granite. So we're going to have to get together and discuss this period. I don't know if we could offer up a better period. We understand the challenge that the Corps is facing in picking a period to do this. But we definitely have some concerns and are not ready to give it our approval at this time. I need to talk to folks, and it is hunting season. Hard to get everyone in the office at the same time. They're all taking off.
So, knowing that we're going to get an MOC out in the next few days, knowing right. that we've got the BCOE the 23rd, if you could try to put together your comments, and or if this 9th to 12th of June date doesn't look like it's best for you, that would be best to have an alternative in your comments when you come back to the MOC.
You bet. Yeah, if we're going to say, you know, this is a bad period, we're not going to offer up one we think would be
a better
option.
Yeah.
But yes, if we disagree with that date range, we'll try to come up with another one that we think would be a little bit safer for the fish.
And here's the comment. I think all of us would like to see the Corps maximize the diving to get the work done as quickly as possible. Because, as I said, it's not really a good time window, and we understand that.
Well, I think maybe Chris, you didn't catch that. I think Chris and Mark feel that they're doing all they can there. They're investigating having two dive groups, one during the day, one at night, two 10-hour dives to try to get this 60, 70 hours of dive time done in 3 days, which is very close. I mean, that just, if that's if things go well, and that's why there's a little bit of concern there whether it's an adequate amount of time. But, you know, they're willing, based on what they know, to give it their best shot. You know, I think the issue here is that that's a lot of time, once you get outside the daylight period, that's going to make this a fairly expensive operation. And so I think that's why, from Mark's perspective, he'd probably prefer that we went out with dates we were most comfortable with the lowest chance of needing a mod. But that said, right, things happen. We never know what kind of spring it's going to be when we're planning the fall before.
So, that's the issue.
We don't want a half installation, you know, either, and then have to bring up a ladder or something, which would be impossible. So, I mean, it's a timing thing, and we'll continue to work with the contract and dive coordinator and stuff to try to get it as complete as we can in those 3 days, and if it takes a second 3 days to finish the second part, you know, the pipes or whatever, then we're going to have to coordinate that as well. So, I mean, we're working as many angles as we can here, so.
Okay, well, we will look for
How about any of the tribes, Cryptic? Is Tom there?
No,
we have, so we have the two tribes that have spoken up today, was the Colvilles and the Yakimos. And, you know, we will get, when the MOC goes out, everybody will get it. They'll get a chance for the Nez Perce and any of the other tribes that may have an interest to comment.
Okay.
So we'll...
I think they got a lot of comments. Okay.
Well, you know...
Good, I'll get the MOC out.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
So then we can move on to the Portland action items. First one is the Dalles e-buffer for fishermen. Okay, who's going to be the lead? Is it Catherine? You ready to lead your action item, Catherine? Uh-oh, Catherine left the call.
No, I'm here.
Oh.
Sorry, I had to unpost on that piece. So are you talking about the
rule consistency.
On the rules, yeah. Yes. You can just kind of put that on to hold until I let you know differently, because it's working through the USDR policy group, and these things don't take, they don't happen quickly, and then they all have to go through state rulemaking. So, just be aware that's all being worked on, but you're not going to hear anything from a month in terms of rapid updates.
Okay, so maybe why don't, you know, in your minutes, Tammy, maybe a check-in like 3 or 4 months from now or something, just a status check-in.
Yeah, I actually didn't see anything there, but, you know, we'll let you know. What I can do is when there's been some progress there, I'll send Tammy a note. That's probably the best way to do it.
Okay.
Years, you can move a bit slowly.
I can talk to that too as well. The rule-based process by itself is a very close kind of process.
Yeah, we have to get the tribe and the states all to agree what the rules would be, and then we have to go through each state's rulemaking process and the tribe's rulemaking process, so it's slow by several things both fight together. So that's just how it works. But they are working on it, so we understand the problems there, and we're trying to fix it.
Okay, thank you. The next one is a Bonneville ROV inspection.
That's talked about later on, too, I noticed. So I'm in 2, 3, 4.
I don't see here, and I don't know, is there anybody else here to speak for Ben? Shall we?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of went over it last time, but we were able to look at the junction pool area a little bit, not in the connection channel itself, but it looked really good. And we're just not going to get the ROV back before winter, so.
Drop it off the list.
Yeah.
Okay, next one. We're back to the Dalles.
Anne, can you please repeat that? I heard none of that.
Oh, okay, sorry. Can you maybe either come closer to the mic or speak a little louder?
Yeah, this room is terrible.
So this is Ida from Bonneville. So at the last meeting, I discussed the fact that we were able to look at the junction pool area at Bonneville, and that looked really good. We weren't able to look at the collection pool at Powerhouse 2, but we're not going to get the ROV back before winter, so.
It runs over.
Doing it for another study.
Worst out of the barn on that one, Russ.
Okay, anybody else?
Thank you. Yeah, that happened to me too.
Okay. I think we're ready to move on to updates.
Well, there's one more.
Oh, okay.
The Dalles.
The Dalles. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Tammy.
So,
Bob?
Yeah, so the last I heard, it sounds like this is a dead issue. I think the decision has already been made by four.
I think there's another.
And others to not pursue the test.
We doubled up everything.
So this is the test for the AWS for the
1.4.
Wasn't this action item?
Told you there wasn't enough on the agenda, so you doubled up everything.
Yeah, the action item is to check the data. Condition
the data?
Yes.
So we did look, we searched for existing data on one fishing operation, and there's not much out there. For one, is just fine daily or hourly counts prior to 2007. apparently, we have to go to some, I don't know, federal warehouse in Seattle or something to be able to get counts.
We don't really need hourly counts.
We don't have, well,
I mean, if
we
there
would,
were.
If we got one fish in operation for only a few hours in a day.
I know, that's not really what I'm looking for anyway. I was looking for, there's got to be days when we were down to one unit. For
we have days like during the winter,
but not during the summer.
But we have very little data for summer operation, one fishing operation, and it's always been real minimal, like an hour here, hour there.
Yeah, that's not helpful. That's not useful.
It's never been long term.
Hours, 8 hours, short duration is not useful. It needs to be more time than that.
Yeah.
We went through this years. I'm talking the 90s.
I think at the last meeting, anyway, at the Miro, brought up in 1997.
Right.
I couldn't find it.
Yeah, he was helping too. He was trying to find it too, and we couldn't.
I have to correct that statement. Just in 97, that's what I remember, but when I looked at the data,
well, I don't know what year it was, but I do remember. I mean, we need to dig up Gary Johnson, I guess, because we had a long discussion about how long it takes to stack and restack, unstack and restack a unit, and trying to get that one of those fish units back up and running. And
did it have to do with a rewind?
I don't know what it was. If it was a, well, probably, it may have been. It was a failure. It was a problem.
Rewinds, but I thought they fit them in the off season.
Well, this was one of those where it took a year. I know it took a year to get that thing fixed. That was the discussion, because I couldn't believe it would take a year to do a fish unit for unstack and restack. I don't think it took that long, but that was what Gary was saying it would be. And we went around and around on that issue, but I know it was mid-90s, maybe. It could have been early 90s.
93, I think it was 92 or 93 when they blew a seal on a hub on a fish unit. That was the first year that I was there with the fish field unit. But they blew a hub on the seal, and that was when they took that fish unit out, and they were running on one for a while, I believe. I don't know, Robert, you might remember some of that too. But then they discovered all the braids were blown. Because then they found fish in the fish unit draft tube, so then they knew there was problems, and then they looked at the whole fish.
I remember that very well.
Yeah. And that might have been a time period that they actually had some runtime on one fish unit operation, but I don't know how long it was.
Or when it was. I mean, that's what you need to know.
92,
93. No, I mean...
But fall of 1993.
Mm-hmm.
But that's...
There were a lot of fish. I remember that.
But information.
Yeah, okay. Is. Well, I know. Yeah, that's the thing. I thought you guys would have some way to look at maintenance records of the units, and I would hope those would go back to probably when the dam was built. And,
one other thing, but you'd be surprised.
Okay.
You'd be
surprised.
Yeah, okay. EPA would be interested in that data, so it sounds like you can't get that data, that it's in a warehouse somewhere.
Well, that was
hour.
Already account.
That's not
the
helpful.
Hourly
that,
stuff.
We don't need that.
You don't need
right,
to go into that detail. I mean, this is, we need to something.
But like this longer term with one fish unit running, you guys can't find that period or that data.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is something that BPA would be interested in. And
I know we were looking back on our fishway inspection records, and I just haven't, since I started there,
yeah, I dug into my files trying to find something on it too.
We
but
check the Canada Fish Passage reports too. Those narratives might have something in there.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's
yeah.
Point.
The angles.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'll look there too.
Yeah, it's just that I've
but is it
been around too long, I guess. I mean, I'm trying to remember back 30 years, but there's been instances of those outages becoming an issue over those 30 years. I know there has. Where'd they go? I mean, we haven't had perfect operation in 30 years of those two units.
Yeah.
If we had, we wouldn't be so worried about putting an emergency system in.
We've had numerous, like I was saying, short trips.
Yeah. But for, but yeah,
remember,
but
we haven't had
the I'm remembering
the
dates.
Runs.
And it was an issue, so it would have been during the run. It wouldn't have been in the winter, we wouldn't care.
I bet it was the 93 then.
Could be.
And then when we had one unit, was it running at 2.5 or was it running lower than that? So we don't even know that. And then as
it would have been,
it
would have been
running
at
about 2.5.
What are they running now?
They're running roughly 2.5
each.
Yeah.
So 5.
Well, I could do a little bit more digging on that, but is it really? I mean, at this point, is it? Is it going to change? Is it
going to
be a game changer?
Well, I guess we get to that agenda topic.
Yeah.
Sure.
There is not
out.
That agenda topic on this agenda. The agenda topic is the spill test.
I'm
discussing the spill test.
Oh,
not
okay.
Discussing a
low-flow test. Is it on there?
Yeah.
Well, then I guess the court's going to say about it.
Yeah, and I can tell you what BPA has to say about it.
So BP is still interested in conducting a test to see if the 1.6 would work. And so we have talked internally about a study design, something that we could do in the near future within the next couple of months when adult fish is about 2,500 fish in the river. So, you know, we're still interested. We want to prove out that the AWS is going to work the way it's going to be built out.
I too would like to see that. But and I also understand the concerns that this is a spot check in the fall, and if you sometimes, you know, insufficient data is worse than no data. So,
well, I mean,
it's a decision on a spot check in the fall.
That's the thing. You know, there's, I don't think there's a change to our decision pathway in our plan. And, you know, a test of 1,400 flow versus zero flow, I mean, I think after looking at the data and what the boss sent out in his NFR, that shows when one fish year came back, you know, the steelhead response is pretty apparent. You know, they were observed at Cal window before number two came back, and the latter seemed to be charged. And the same thing with Chinook. I don't know. I'm not really concerned about it. I think the work that's gone into this project over the last 10, 20 years has been vetted.
Let me just say one thing. If it's a zero versus a 1.4, we will not say it. We will not do that.
Yeah, and I don't think that's what we were talking about internally. It was a zero to 1.4 comparison. We were thinking if you could stepwise that one unit.
Do a 2.5. CDC,
and can you step it down any further? What's the minimum it would run? So would it be, how close could we get to that 1.4?
We can get pretty close. It depends on the cavitation limit. Yep. But I talked to operators, they said we can get real close to one.
Yeah, and so that would be a proposal from BP.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I'd rather just do it and see what we see. And at least we can show that we try to look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's prove it up.
Well, what would it get us, though?
It doesn't get us anything.
It doesn't get us anything.
I mean, right away, the first thing that I would say when you came back with whatever data you had doesn't apply. It doesn't apply to the spring.
There are going to be operation scenarios with valves where you're going to have no flexibility.
Yeah.
You know,
it's a spring operation that we're worried about.
If you lose those fishing, you've got something.
You're testing the wrong animals, you're testing the wrong size of animals, you're testing the wrong river, you're testing the wrong everything. It's flawed, totally. It would be so totally flawed that I would just throw it out. I wouldn't even consider it. You can do it. Do what you want. It's your deal.
For the district and division are not going forward with the test. Right. That is the official word, and that is what we have to pass on here at FPOM. So it's going to be taken up and needs to be elevated at a higher level than here.
Okay.
I mean, you can do the test. I don't care, but it wouldn't change anything.
So does anybody else have any closing comments on that? I guess you summed it up pretty well for everyone, Tammy.
Good closer.
So you know your path forward. Yeah.
Yep, you know our path forward. Thank you.
Hey, Ann, would you kind of recap that?
Tammy would love to recap that. She's very concise.
We are not going forward with the test.
Okay. That was very concise.
It's easy to write that one down. No.
So I think we are ready at this point to probably keep moving on the agenda. I know I tried to breeze past that one. In terms of completed actions, I think we can skip that right now, go into updates. 3111 is new because of some comments at previous meetings to give a wrap-up of anything that was in Appendix A for the agencies and tribes awareness, and the only thing that we had out there was the WEC testing possible. We don't have any notifications at this point of any activities, but that's what we had covered in our Appendix A through this period. So that one's on there for awareness. The next one, John 3.1.12.
Yeah, this construction project has a life of its own. We've had changes in PMs and contract people, and so it was kind of a whirlwind chasing it down. Basically, where we're at with the voltage and deflector modification and stuff, it was delayed. It was supposed to start September 1st, and then they had to wait until the RSW die was done. They had to inspect the RSW. That was completed last week of September. There's a diet scheduled on the 14th and 19th that's been scrapped. The contractor is running about 2 weeks behind schedule, and there is supposed to be a diet to inspect the flow deflector before they start work. Well, they're still mobilizing, and they don't even know when they want the diet yet, so that's pretty much where we're at right now.
Okay, so that's... The update right now is there's still a dive that's going to need to be scheduled at some point.
Yeah, the dive is scheduled. We don't know the dates, but I do know it's probably going to get pushed into November. Okay.
So the next one then, does anybody have any comments on that? Next one is another Ice Harbor Dam study, just an update there on 09.
Yeah, this is the Grad Trumbull study. Basically, the pipe that they were going to install for the release has been installed in Unit 3. Unfortunately, Unit 3 is out of service and won't return back to service until October 17th. So the study wasn't possible until after 17th. Currently, it is scheduled to start lower 1% tests from the 20th to 23rd of October. And I was told the upper 1% a week later, so that would place it in the very end of October, first week of November. But the modification on this coordination form says 3rd to 6th November for the upper 1% test. And then the release pipe and removal was supposed to take place after December 16th.
So that was sent out, and I don't believe there was any comments received, and so he's just giving an update just from the status.
Okay. Yeah, we talked about this yesterday a bit in SRWG, and the way those pipes are going in, they need some discussion later on. Brad's okay. Aware of that.
Okay. So if there's anything that needs to come through FPOM, they'll do some coordination.
Well, we talked about this in SRWG yesterday a bit with Brad about the need to have those pipes possibly adjustable depending on what the vertical distribution studies show and all that. So work on.
Okay. The next item, as part of the agenda, came out the winter maintenance schedule for our adult ladder. So would like everybody to take a look at that and give us any comments,
and I think pass around.
No, that's okay. Everybody received it electronically, okay. And then we'll have a comment period, and then if people could bring their comments probably back to November, it would be convenient for us to have any further discussion so that it could be finalized.
Okay.
Next one, John, you want to just give the quick update on where you're at with the transport program?
Okay, Kurt. Okay, I see where we are. The transport is ongoing at Lloyd Grant, Refuse. It will be ending October 31st or November 1st, depending on when, what day the trucks are scheduled there, every other day right now. Transport is ended at Lloyd Monumental at the end of September, so they're currently in bypass. And as mentioned last month, we had the columnaris issues, and we did implement the every other day collection and transport the same day. And the last day of transport for them, I think, was the 29th of September.
So I think the only other, so the collection for sampling is also completed at McNair.
That's right, McNair is complete, but obviously not transporting. Right.
Okay, so then we're ready to move into...
Final issue was that item that I didn't have a chance
to... Sorry, I forgot to ask if you had one to add something. Did you want to add something here?
This was that fish mortality that you guys had in McNary. A steelhead jumped out of the juvenile collection channel and died on the grading. Maybe I get a chance to look at that next Tuesday or something like that. But I do want to make sure we don't let things like that happen in the future. So as much as we can, if we have a way of, if it's just simple netting.
So that's a discussion. Carl, I don't think stayed on the line. I think, are you still
here? No, I'm still here.
Okay. So Carl, did you hear Gary's comment?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think this has happened like twice since I've been here. It's pretty rare. Basically, for some reason, fish are inclined to go over the rail at the north end of the channel, probably because it's the upstream end of an artificial stream, plus the water levels are slightly higher at that end. what happened in this case, we put netting all the way along the north end there to prevent this from happening, and the orifices that are normally active, the south orifices, south of the two, north and south are each talking about. We have netting up, it's way up. It's probably 12 feet above the level of the water, 10 or 12 feet above the level of the water, and that's not a problem. The only time you run into problems is if you're operating in a north orifice for a short time, typically here in a BBS cleaning. This happened during a BBS inspection, which is about the same as a cleaning, and the tech was only gone for less than an hour, and when she came back, her fish had gone over the side, one of those things. The netting at that point is about 8 feet above the water, I'd say, roughly. It goes to the top of the railing. But the only way you could really prevent something like this from happening is probably to raise the netting up the full 12 feet at all the places there at the north end. I don't know, it's a lot of expense to stop something that's a relatively rare event, but we could do it if we're seeing the worst.
So I think if there's a chance on Tuesday, Gary's going to be out there. If he could take a look at it, and then he may want to make that recommendation. Carl, why don't we just leave that open?
Yeah, Carl, I'd just like to have a look at it and see how difficult the issue is.
Right.
I've got your write-up here. And also I noticed that you guys said the fish was unclipped. And I'm looking at it. Are you sure? I don't see a adipose fin, and I see a very eroded dorsal, which would tell me a hatchery, but I wasn't there.
I don't have a picture in front of me right now. You probably have this a little bit here.
Okay. It's not a big deal. It's just for us.
It's gone. It's, I think, it's kind of hard to see in this photograph because there's kind of a, you've got the darkness of the, thing behind there. I was told it was unclipped.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I mean, the dorsals, usually when they're eroded like that,
doesn't have any fins.
We consider that a hatchery, which would probably lessen to some degree our concern. But it could be either one. Who knows what's going to jump out of there?
They told me it was unclipped. Yeah, so I couldn't imagine where I couldn't.
Not
it's not the lights in the photograph here.
Not that important. I mean, the reality. I shouldn't even have brought it up. I mean, the point is that fish do jump out. It could be hatchery, it could be wild, either one, and we'd rather not have that. If it's fairly easy to address, and that's, I guess, what I want to look at is how, what you guys are dealing with there. I realize it's infrequent.
So, Charlie, do you have any comments to add to Gary's, or are you comfortable with NIMS?
No, I agree with Gary. Take a look at it and see what you can do or what's appropriate and go from there.
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody else have a comment?
Oh, well, I should be around Tuesday morning, Eric, so just give me a holler when you get here and I'll show you where it happened.
Okay.
Thank you. So, if nobody has anything else from Walla Walla, we're ready to move into Portland updates.
All right, so we have a list of MOCs that will have activities coming up for Bill. There's no concerns. We'll move on to the bottom unit 11 update.
So you were going to go through those MOCs one at a time. Although those are the ones that we've already done. It's okay, sorry.
That's how this new agenda item, so that you can remember.
That's it. Okay, no, I'm
oh, so yeah, this
I'm
is similar to R311. In other words, this is the stuff in Appendix A that
we don't, no, it's not. It's our coordinated MOC.
Oh, yeah, these are all done.
Okay.
So, you know that NIST is still expected to come back in December 2014. Alright, IceCache sluice wave 8 installation.
Well, that was up above already. We already covered that one. Oh, there's...
The IceCache powerhouse 1?
I just saw that in 3, 2, 1, 6.
Yes, but now we have dates. And
you have dates?
We do.
Wow. Updates.
Would you like to come up here? So the ice and trash sluice wave date is expected to be, the repairs are expected to be finished the first week of November. So we're trying to get some sort of concurrence on when we would like to reinstall it. It'll take about 3 weeks, the estimated amount of time to install it. And so we're proposing the last 3 weeks of November, which would be while Bradford Island is coming down, which would be the 10th year.
Powerhouse off?
Yeah, the powerhouse on will be off.
Okay. As long as we're not running it.
Okay.
All but 11. I guess that's all.
All existing units.
All 7 available.
All right, so nobody has any issues with that?
No, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Were you going to cover that with a coordination just to have it record?
We had that coordination, and it was supposed to be done in July and August, and so I will update it with these new dates.
Yeah, that's, that works, just to keep that record.
Did it get blown out last season or this last?
I hope it was.
Or if it's just routine maintenance or something?
Yeah, it didn't actually come through fisheries, it went through the divers. So.
Oh, okay. So just like routine stuff.
Just looking at the pipe. Mm-hmm. Right, and so then that brings us to our fish conservation improvements, which goes on for four updates.
Okay, did you want to jump down this one or?
Show it down.
Yeah, I just heard. So, we've got two lighting choices up there. I'm going to try to light the accounting slot from over the top of the slot rather than from inside the count station. And this kind of light is a GE infrared ordinary floodlight, but it puts out a ton of infrared. This kind of light is pure LED infrared light, and so we have to use this with a combination of regular visual light floodlights. So I take two kinds of lights. With this, we can just get away with one light. Mm-hmm.
And that other one is actually the same light that Perry used.
Yes.
On their doing the lamp break, video counting and turning that account.
So if you guys want to comment on that, feel free to comment.
So it's a little unclear.
Yeah.
What are you planning to do?
We want to put as much infrared light into the water as possible, and get away from visual light as much as possible, because we don't think fish are going to see the infrared just like we can't see infrared. As soon as they turn on that infrared, you're not going to see a thing.
And they would be mounted.
Are they both infrared?
They're both infrared, but the floodlight puts out some regular light.
Right.
As well.
Because you can see those. I know you can.
And you can see it.
So infrared.
Seems like an obvious choice. LED.
Okay. Issue number two. Some things I shouldn't tell Tammy.
Just don't stand so close.
Yeah. Close your ears.
You guys are under the impression that we're going to cover the floor with Teflon. But we've actually got a sheet of something that's very similar, but it's not Teflon.
Uh-oh.
It's... yeah. It's UM8, or let's see, instead of PTFE, it's UHMW.
Okay. High molecular
weight. Yeah, high molecular weight stuff. And around the world, it's used in hip joints a lot. It's used as...
In bypass systems.
It's used as artificial ice.
That's the same stuff we put on 159.
Yeah, we've used it in bypasses.
Yeah.
It's not unusual. But it's not Teflon.
It's not Teflon. And the only thing that worries me about it, it doesn't have the density of Teflon, but it does, it absorbs very, very little water, as Teflon does. It's actually slicker than Teflon. It has a lower coefficient of friction than Teflon.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that it could work even better than Teflon.
You can get it past Tammy.
Yeah, the problem is Tammy.
So the reason for the Teflon is that nothing grows in there and it's easy to clean? Is that what that's all about?
Right, nothing sticks to Teflon.
Yeah, and so the UHMW would be similar since it's slippery.
It'd be extremely similar.
And prevents white, higher ability.
Right, so if you're okay.
Yeah.
That's always one of the big complaints, is the floor is too dark.
This is where I see some of the
fashion. I know that's been recommended.
For
the floor. That's for the
floor. As long as it's Battleship Gray, I'm good.
I remember this Battleship Gray.
Hold on, we're the Army here.
That's true.
Yeah. So chartreuse is more than color, right?
Green.
We got
two color samples.
Right.
Green is going to be between.
I said 18% gray the other day. Sticking to it. 18% gray.
You can take one home and think about it.
Yeah. It's like color.
Yeah, I'm a walleye fisherman. I know what chartreuse looks like.
Wow. These are fish.
Wait. Are these laser jet or inkjet conditions?
Is that the color you had in mind?
Okay, we're really in conflict with you guys. Is we'd like to paint the panels inside the crowded box on the other side of the slot. We really need to paint them chartreuse green, which is also known as pyrite green.
Know all about it.
The reason we'd like to do this is because we want to take the video and we want to take it as digital video. Then we want to run the video through our computer and we want to apply a few things to it, a few rules or filters. And if that background is green, we can subtract the green out of the image that we're seeing through the camera, the image of the window. And you think about that when you subtract the green out, what's going to be left? Just fish, or sticks, or water, or whatever floats by.
How about black?
Yeah, we can try black. So, anyway, that's where we're at there, because we want to subtract out some of the picture so that we're just left with fish, because you probably know what we're aiming for after that. If we got nothing left after we do some subtractions, good, we'll get rid of that and we'll just end up with fish.
Got it.
So in short, in our video, shorting way down.
The last up comment was suggested that we just paint, we try a panel with this, and we can do the back side of the panel, the battleship gray, and then if we watch fish reaction, and if there seems to be something wrong, we'll switch it around.
There's always a reaction. I mean, that's the problem with conservations.
A lot of questions on the infrared part, though.
And this is not when exactly...
Go ahead, Jeff. When you use infrared, it's a different light spectrum, and what you see is different, and what is recorded is different, right? Because you're reflecting only infrared.
Right.
So, it's sort of like looking at infrared photos. Things will look different. People have trouble identifying because they're used to seeing something in a different light spectrum?
Well, it'll be different, for sure. But we don't think it's going to be much different.
Does it convert to black and white now? That's what it does, right?
When you see it in video, it's pure black and white. There's no color. Because color is not denoted that low.
Well, what I see is that your color there, if you turn that to black and white, that's about 18% gray. And so that's why I'm wondering why gray, something more neutral and less likely to shock the hell out of the fish as they go through there. I mean, this is, you're messing with a ladder that's got the worst problem of any ladder in the Columbia River system.
Right.
So it's not like we're trying to get better passage here. I don't know that I want to be sticking in things that are experimental or unusual than what we've seen.
That's part of the reason we're choosing this ladder, though, for potential modifications, right? So the impacts, if they are negative, it's the most negative ladder already. It's not going to hurt too bad.
The problem with grid, of course,
two negatives.
Fish are silver and it's gray. So.
Right. No, I understand, but you're also talking about if you go to a gray scale anyway, you're not that far off. And then you're doing this so people can count these fish visually, or is this for video counting?
It's for video counting.
So then you can work with your sensors, because the camera sensors can also be adjusted to pick up different, depending on filters and... So I'm wondering if we've explored all the options in order to try to keep this as neutral as possible to the fish and make some changes to the equipment that we're using to allow us to get these videos so that we don't potentially impact fish. I guess I don't know that you've explored all the options of what's available in terms of sensors and light.
The truth is we definitely not. Explored all the options.
You might be able to change the color of your light and the sensitive of your sensors and be able to do this without having to expose the fish to anything. So I know a little bit about cameras, but that's above and beyond my expertise.
Well, as far as the color of the light goes, we start reflecting green light off of, for example, or red light, whatever you call it, off the front or the side face of the camera, off the fish, back at us, and we start subtracting out. That will be subtracting out some of the fish.
Yeah, it would be. But is it enough that causes a problem with identification or not? That's really what we care about.
Right.
It's getting the IDs here.
How about if we just start with the more neutral, more acceptable colors and see how it turns out? And if it looks good, then we're done.
That's true.
If it doesn't look good, then we can keep trying some different colors.
Yeah.
Until we get to one.
From what I hear from Nathan is that we may want to do this in a lot of other places. Then, so you're starting with the lowest impact. Whatever you have could be carried to other ladders, and that's what concerns me. Is that I'm already concerned with count stations. I always have been. I don't like them, and so modifying those to potentially make it more objectionable to fish is definitely not the way I want to go. I'd like to just get them out of the damn ladders altogether.
Test black.
Well,
I think he's on to something long term though with the transfer of whatever technology you agree upon here, because it seems to me that the hope as we move forward with the counting processing contract is to look at the efficiencies of video versus what we're already doing. And so it would be great to have this become optimized somewhere so that we could have a really good consideration for that other sites.
Broader application.
I do have one question on computer ratings. It's a short wavelength, no short wavelength.
It's
so that's a really long wavelength, the other way around. So that means when you have water with a lot of particulates in it, you have more absorption, and then some of the light gets absorbed, and you won't see as much as with shorter wavelength land, right?
Right. The long gets absorbed severely by any particulates in the water.
So you have real turbid conditions that might not have them.
Right. It'll be difficult to get the IR all the way down to bottom of the count slot when it's turbid.
It will be, yeah.
So,
this might be different at different spots. And this is one thing we see is throughout the country where people try to count fish in any automated fashion, they come up with different solutions. Not too easy. But, for things like night counting, things are becoming more important in the lamprey world. To optimize some of those counts is important.
You can color whatever you want for lamprey.
I once ran into somebody who was working on a computer programming project for image recognition for salmon, and he made it sound kind of challenging to draw the line between different species. Is it still like something they're trying to work out, or have they successfully
done digital image recognition? No, I don't think anybody's ever been successful. The shapes are too.
Yeah, the spotting and everything. So
this isn't about identifying.
Okay.
It's about condensing the videos so that a human can go through.
Okay, so they're never quite going to go to like get rid of the person.
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah,
not,
maybe.
Not now, but you know, when we go out for another contract in a year, there's the potential that as we do the scope, if we want to enlarge who we might have bidding and the technologies, that we could get proposals for stuff like that. And so I think just from a technical standpoint, anything that they're able to glean from this will help us make better decisions.
Right.
We have had informal discussions as part of some of the controversy with the existing fish count contract as to exactly that topic. And there are some people that feel that they can get there, although there hasn't been anybody that's wanted to put money down or had the money to put down to let them explore that potential. I think just the lighting change and being able to go to video right now is probably going to be our best chance for finding something that we might want to change or tweak as we move forward. But
okay.
Right.
Well, I guess in summary, I'd like to see it stay neutral as we can. Work that angle first, work your camera, your sensor. I mean, it's like that tag on that fire It's a signature over there. Read it. It stands out. I mean, it really stands out. Why? Because, you know, that's, you want to be able to see that. So things that really stand out, I can shock fish, I think, or at least give them some pause. And when they pause in that situation, they go back downstream. That's a concern I have. So, you know, I mean, I would, at the end of the day, if the other alternative would be to test it. You know, there's some sort of a test where you look at different colors or something. But just to throw it in and then and kind of go with that, I wouldn't want to do that. I definitely would have to test it first.
Seems like
rigorously.
The approach right now is, like you said, you start with the neutral.
I like
keep
Bob's
moving,
approach.
Keep moving until you get, I mean, if the neutral doesn't work, okay, try another color. And then when we get to one that we know works, then say, okay, this is it. Is that okay?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. To go into something that radical, I guess, I would definitely want to see some testing done before we even thought about taking that elsewhere.
We may not even need to.
Yeah, you may not need to go there, but I would try to avoid that.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I mean, that's just knee-jerk, but yeah, it seems reasonable to try to keep things as neutral as you can and not go crazy in your color selection and something like this. Especially when fish are already pretty well spooked going through these ladders.
Okay, two other quick issues for you guys. With these lights, we'll try to go with a combination of LED and floodlights. I personally don't want to point them directly down into the water. I'd like to paint the wall above the cabin window white or play it over with stainless steel and point the lights at the wall and let the light reflect down from the wall, if that's good with you.
I mean, more diffused.
Yeah,
it will.
More diffused. Plus, I don't like the idea of just pointing stuff directly at fish.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good idea.
And it gets all my light, all the light that we're using, where it needs to be, as close to the wall as possible, so we can, so you're, it comes down at the fish like this, we can see the fish better.
So you're painting where, what again? Is the ceiling?
Just the right above the window.
Right.
Great face there.
Right.
Just brighten that up.
Brighten that up. So.
Above the water surface.
So then your light will be coming in at an angle rather than direct, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
the
fuse that so you're above the water, right? So you won't be getting reaching down as far if you're diffusing it.
Correct.
It won't. Right.
Correct.
Without seeing it, I mean you're talking about bouncing off of a vertical wall, and that's you're expecting that light to go down. So
right.
Your angle's going to be a little bit off too then.
Yeah.
Well, whatever.
Probably.
And you almost have to tilt that a little bit. I mean that's, you're right. That would be a fish hardly able to see the light. At that. You know,
yeah.
But if you had a certainly like a ceiling over and you're bouncing straight off of that, then instead of seeing a single light, you're going to see the whole thing and be a bright.
You're talking about the visible light, not the infrared?
Probably both, but we don't need to bounce the infrared off the wall.
Yeah, instead of the infrared, you want to try to get as deep as you can see.
Right.
I see. So this is just a visible light.
If that's what we really need to bounce off the wall. The infrared. No,
so it sounds like your spotlight that has both is what you're going to put out close to the wall and bounce it off so that you're keeping all the light very close to the wall.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Somehow I get the impression that if we drive by an 84, you're going to see this glow over the ladder.
Yeah.
Okay.
Drive by on the freeway. Whoa.
Yeah. You hear the song?
Yeah. You're going to have to hook up one generator just to that.
Okay, one other issue. The same contractors want to run the video through a computer for us and cut out green or cut out whatever we cut out so that we just end up with fish. He's taken a look at our situation here in Bonneville, across the road there, with the juvenile, adult juvenile separator on the juvenile bypass system over there. Mm-hmm. So, as you guys well know, every spring we video that thing so that we can watch where the kelps go through. And that's a really difficult area to just cut out a bunch of stuff because everything's moving. And his technology is still relying primarily on getting rid of everything but what is moving. In other words, still motion detection. Primarily, you know, but everything's moving
on
the separator because a little water pumps everywhere. So we're, I'm telling him, I think we're going to have to, if we really do apply some of this technology, we're going to have to start with and an infrared beam that we run across the separator bars, run across the top of the bars. So as a fail-safe kind of thing, anything that breaks the beam will start recording video. So we've tried to get a beam in between those little water pumps.
You can't do that. They're going like this.
Yeah, they're just in this room.
Yeah, so, it's designed that way.
Yeah, so the issue I'm bringing to you guys is, what if we shut down a row of those fountains?
You mean a row, not a whole bar, but just a row across?
A row so across.
You could put clamp, like a PVC on the top of drop it over it or something like that.
Right.
So we have to be smooth.
What's the purpose of those?
The fountains.
Sprinklers, yeah, fountains.
They're there to keep juveniles from sliding down the bars and off the end of the separator. They go instead. The idea is to turn them and drop them down through the separator bars.
Mm-hmm. So there's utility to having them in place.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
that's part of the design. Yep.
Yeah, if anything's coming across the bars, if it's wiggling. Because of water, it's going to keep moving.
Yeah, we lost a lot of, I mean, before we did that, we had a lot of fish just sliding right off the end, and so you'd have to have a separator bar that went a lot further than what we have now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for just that March part of the season, and then we would take it back off again, whatever you use. And I would use maybe just some PVC cut and slept over the top of it, smooth on both ends so it's flush. So you don't get a rough spot there, something fairly thin.
Okay.
Or you could probably put a screw in those holes too, for that matter. I don't know.
Yeah.
If you've looked at how would you do it? I guess that's the question.
It
how would you
flush,
do it?
Flush, so some kind of plug.
It have to be flush. It could not stick out.
Right. Or at least it had to be very smooth if it did.
Right.
Probably just stick some kind of. Some kind of putty or whatever, that when you're done with this, at the end of the day, just poke it.
Silicone poke.
You remember that silicone maybe.
Silicone.
So you poke it and then the debris goes where? So I guess I'm wondering if there's.
Wouldn't. You mean what debris?
Yeah, so you still have the silicone there. Yeah, putty, whatever.
It would go down
be.
That. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Down
so you're like building up
year,
the debris in the fire or whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing that on one hand, there's utility to maintaining these things, and this is just for ease of the camera. So it's like, what are we trading off by doing that? on one hand there's utility, and the other hand there's potential impact to fish.
Yeah, we're training.
I want to go here.
So what's the request to resolve this so keep moving?
Are you asking for something written up?
Yeah, I'd love to see something written up. There's definitely a lot of issues concerning
that. Can you put together something in writing that people can review?
This is pretty much a no-brainer. Just figure out a way to do it that doesn't, to plug it that doesn't cause water to fly straight up in the air, fish to fly straight up in the air, or debris to build up in the pipes later over the next eon or two that we're doing this.
Okay. Well, is there an issue with I thought there was utility to those sprinklers
absolutely.
Pushing fish down through the separator.
That's the way it's designed, but this thing is how many feet long?
They're blocking like 5.
And you're going to do
100.
Yeah, I would, not do more than 4 inches, maybe, something like that.
Okay, so enough? Out of a...
Out of multiple feet. I don't know how long that thing is. 8 feet?
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I designed it, I should know, but I don't.
Well, that puts it in perspective. It sounds like it was going to be a significant portion.
Sorry, this wide enough to get it across and reflect it back.
Yeah.
So that's something that would come online... This coming year? This coming couple months?
We could do it.
I heard early spring.
Yeah. Well, at least
March.
Count in March 1st.
March 1st.
So it'd be March. Spring count there.
So it'd be March 1st until the trigger is reached, right?
Right.
We don't want to miss one steelhead, so make sure. Every fish trip that trigger.
That's the reason.
I know what you're thinking.
And what we're getting is a reduction. Right. The delta is the reduction in video coming.
Reduction in video coming, and make sure we don't miss a single fish.
Yep.
So where does...
But you have to say it. A single fish.
So this is going to trip it up at the top end of the separator, more or less. Where does the video take its picture? Yeah. How long does it take to get that running so you get the picture? That's all been worked out?
Well, with these modern DVRs, you can actually, you're recording all the time. So when you trigger it, you can get the fish back here before it actually started tripping.
So it's safe.
So you can pick up 5 seconds before the...
So it's a signal for on a continually running video then. Okay, right. I thought I just turned the camera on or something like that.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So now
we're recording all the time, but it's deleting as well. Sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of buffer.
So exactly.
Buffer's on the
side of here. So it is turning it on and off. That's what
I'm doing. Don't worry about it. It's
starting to hang here
for a while.
Yeah.
Lamprey, I think,
we'll
give it to
some
sort of
bad
time.
We don't generally have that issue in our
separator.
Not
in
March.
Yeah, we're okay.
So Gary,
okay.
can they paint the cover when they do it inside the power bank green?
I thought that's what he was going to say. So you want to paint the bars power bank green or something? That's what I was waiting for.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Hey, Miro, are you John Day Fish Mortalities, or is that Tammy?
Just one fish, and I think Gary sorted it out by looking at
That's right.
So it is very interesting.
Okay.
It's kind of like a McNary thing too, I think. It's just that if it's very infrequent and if it's a big effort to do the fix, then probably not worth it.
You ready to move?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they exercise the gates on 2 feet, so 2 feet up. There was a steelhead in the second lowest gate hole. some folks come down here today, we're going to try and flush them out. Let's see how we do.
Okay, thank you. Just keep moving here. Research fitter wig updates. The first one is the V2 trash rig.
Yeah, I don't really have an update for this other than it's in use at Powerhouse 2 right now. And G testing, yesterday at SRWG, I reported that we were going to try to set the special fitter wig to go over the EDR supplement on October 21st. I'm having no luck being able to get a room at REP for the 21st, so
oh, no.
I may have to reschedule this one. I sent you guys. I sent you guys the documents for review. I'll send out a formal fitter review notice when I get my cover letter back. But the documents on the FPOM website.
Have you tried QuickVac or?
Yeah, I need to talk with the PDT members.
If they want to go that far, away from their computers.
Yeah, that is an option. So. Yeah, you'll see a doodle poll for me or some phone calls here soon after I talk to the PDT most.
Okay.
But I also wanted to report on the AFF just to give folks an idea of where we're at this year compared to last year. Last year we feel is the best reporting we've had in recent years for mortalities in the AFF. So sockeye, similar this year to last year, 11 morts this year, 10 morts last year. Steelhead, similar, 2 morts this year, 1 more last year. Coho, 0 morts this year, 11 last year at this time. And the biggest improvement is in Chinook. So this year we've had 14, and last year we had 92 this time.
So can you talk about that in terms of proportion of the fish passing through the AFF, or give some relative scale?
I haven't been able to put the time in the running those numbers yet. So all I have right now is totally.
A lot of fish.
I think
I've gone through it.
Yeah.
I think hardly any of them are pit tagged though, so they're not.
Right. Our sample morts are way down. I mean, I think we've made huge improvements in reducing sample
morts. Seems
like
it. Yeah. We'll give it a couple more years before we say hallelujah.
But
seems to.
But so far, so good.
Yeah. Yeah, they seem to pick up quite a bit towards as the temperatures warmed and we got into the later season.
Yeah. So, we're looking at making the baffle that we have in place permanent in its position it's in now, not reinstalling the pipes, but holding on to them for the future.
Right.
And doing more. We think we're pretty good with the operation we have.
Yeah.
We may have the opportunity when we get a water level sensor here in the next month to do a zero flow operation overnight. We're going to try that out this winter. So right now we're running about 15 at 20% open overnight.
Uh-huh. 20%.
It's significantly reduces flow more.
Yeah, the shad issue seems to not be as bad, even though we had quite a few shad this year. So.
So
cautiously optimistic.
Yeah.
Good.
And that's really all I had.
Unless anybody had anything else they needed added to the agenda.
Did I hear lamprey numbers in those?
Lamprey numbers, we had 31 this year and 42 at the same time last year.
Yeah, lamprey are still.
There's the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and CRIPTIC has been collecting morts and analysis on those for disease and other
contaminants.
Will that come back to? I mean, I asked for that to come back to us at some point.
Yeah,
I'd
like to see that.
They're still on track for doing that. I hope.
Yeah.
Whoever's responsible.
Fish and Wildlife Service.
Ken.
So yeah, we'll try to get in touch with Ken again.
Yeah.
Get something.
Okay. Yeah, as we asked a couple of months ago. Yeah, or a few months ago.
So you've got one of your pending, Tammy. You like those pendings that we never have a date.
It's a new pender.
Someday we're going to get it. I'd like to
carry it along for the next 4 or 5 months.
Yeah. Well, I think we're probably ready to move to the RCC update. Are you on the phone, Lisa?
Jeff is here, so we'll do the quick thing.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff.
Okay. So I got the biomark last Thursday. And the AFS DNA came out, and Pacific States was there to do some noise tests. So that whole exit at 10L we talked about for years, we had approval to do it last year, but it turned out that the location was too noisy, and there wasn't enough time for wandering up to move it. So we've got a location that's not noisy. At least, hopefully, never say never on this one, the way things have gone, I believe it's in and working when I see it. The other place, though, the more I think about some of these picket lead questions and what's the impact of putting picket leads down, I really would like to have something where it enters where the fish enter the AFF, turn off the picket leads. And so Biomark also came out and did some noise tests there. Although I think you're going to have to do some further noise tests, and that they ran into some problems with doing some shielding there. So I sent around what Biomark come up with, what I would like to do. It's still going to require another site visit from Biomark there, and probably some noise testing at PSMFC to finalize exactly where. It's hard to do this sort of thing with watering up. But if I'm going to do the contract modifications and everything, I need to get started on that. And get started in the process so we don't run into the situation where we did last year, where we had the approval, but tootled by the time we got the approval and everything lined up, there wasn't enough time to get it in, check it, make sure it worked before watering up occurred.
This is half. Duplex?
This is full
both.
Duplex.
It's full duplex.
It's both.
Way of also doing half duplex, but that is may create some problems, and that switching from half to full duplex creates noise issues that may affect the
OCD. I see. Okay.
So I don't know. Ideally, it'd be nice to do half and full, but I'm not sure if that's going to be possible.
It would be possible to have one that doesn't continuously switch. It could be manually or automatically set for one mode or the other.
I don't know.
You see a lot, there are a lot of frameworks that happen there, so that's always a problem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a good question for Biomark. But I guess I don't really care much what enters in there during the off hours. I'm just thinking about it in terms of some of these morts. I see very few with pit tags, but
What is the point of this? That's what I have the Biomark thing, but no.
Well,
it's an addition. You're talking about occluding 11 inches of the channel, which is pretty significant. So I don't know.
Is this the input or the output?
This is the. Tired of that one. We've talked about that one for years.
Good.
Now I'm back to the new one. You keep adding stuff. What is this? Kind of like the Jeff Fryer
stopping fish from entering
playground out here, or what?
My main answer there is one of that I'd love to see just what is the impact of dropping these picket baits? How quickly do fish start to move into the adult ladder? What happens when you do a raising picket baits? Do fish turn around and go back out? How long do fish spend in the adult fish facility from the start to end?
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the questions that I would love to have answers to. And then, kind of wondering that might be an issue in terms of how much, although on the other hand, we're always, FPOM's always trying to keep fish out of the adult fish facility.
That's right.
So it just seems like this.
So could you make it larger?
It's right in.
That's what my problem is. If you could maybe cover a couple of yards of air,
I did run it by the University of Idaho just to see if they had any concerns along those lines, and they didn't. I don't know. These fish are.
They're not. So, is there do you have any kind of hydraulic analysis that goes along with that? Because that is pretty extensive. I mean, that's a lot of. What's the entire width on that area? What, 4 feet? Less than that.
I believe it's about 4 feet.
Yeah, I can't tell. This picture doesn't quite look.
It says 48.
It says 48, but it's I don't know where it starts and stops. To tell you the truth. kind of a weird picture.
I'd like to have our hydraulic.
So that, yeah, this needs to be hydraulically vetted first with our guys too.
Folks, are you concerned about this bump here and losing traffic efficiency in the AFF or anything?
Depends on how it's shaped.
Keep them out.
You know, if it's ramped and kind of rounded on the top there, it's probably fine. Well, not necessarily rounded on the top, but just so there's no sharp corners as they come up and over.
What's the velocity through here? I'm supposed to be able to answer those kind of questions. Okay, so hydraulically, there's nothing out here about hydraulics, and so that's a pretty large footprint, and I'm surprised that it has to be 5 1/4. I assume those are inches. 5 1/4 inches. What do we use? How far does the dowels cut window? How thick are those? The count window pit tag detectors the pit detectors that we put in up there just recently, that those are seem to be pretty thin.
Yeah.
Like 3 inches, 2-3 inches?
Four.
Are they that much? Four? Okay.
Yeah, maybe less.
I was thinking less. I mean, it just seems like they're maybe 3 inches or so. This seems excessive. I know he's using pipe here, that's maybe why, versus the flat channel, but it seems to me that there ought to be a way to get this less of a footprint on here. But the biomarks, is this Steve? Yeah.
Yes, okay. It would be possible to call Steve.
Maybe it gets more and more expensive.
Steve is supposed to be standing by at jury duty. So.
Oh, well, he's got nothing else to do with it, right?
But I could get in touch with him.
Well, you know, I don't really have a problem putting one in there. It's just that that's a big footprint. So that's like the one that you guys were looking at a couple of iterations ago for the other end. It was kind of big.
I'd like to see what the whole thing is, see water and the towels and the house wants to fit in there. It's
okay.
It's hard to tell when you're out there on Thursday as to what, you know, what you're dealing with.
So what are you looking for today?
Well, I guess are there any... Is it okay to go ahead with the exit?
Right.
And are there any red flags?
So you're looking for that both.
With the infrastructure, I just want to, before I start with contracting, just the whole contract issue, proceeding with Biomark, just want to make sure there aren't any showstoppers. I think it is okay to just go ahead with the lower part, the exit.
Right.
And you kind of leave the upper part for later. And again, you still got to do some noise testing and all this. And once we dewater, it's going to require a trip from Biomark. Especially on the entrance one.
The entrance to the AFF, so are you saying that? I mean, I think I'm more comfortable with the upstream one, you know, that we talked about in that location before.
Yeah.
We've had hydraulic design look at that.
Yeah. The upstream at the exit. You're talking about
the exit
upstream
the one
of
the entrance.
That one's too new.
And it may be possible to take that thing at the far end of the entrance where it winds out, in which case it would be there may not be, I don't know exactly how it was, but there would at least reduce it by 5 1/4 inches. You might not have any.
Right.
That might be a better alternative.
So it may be possible to put it there.
Yeah, that's. I would look into that.
Out and it spreads out. Right.
So on the exit section, we've looked at that. I think you're okay there to go ahead with that one. The other one needs some hydraulic work or maybe a redesign. You okay, John?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it sounds like with these somewhat thick pipes, like that might be almost a minimum size where they would have. What's the constraint on those?
Because
shielding.
Just
well, it's that shielding is the issue for the most part. You know, that's and the noise issues with BO3 might be part of why he went this way. But see if you can get that narrowed down, or maybe just tuck it in a different spot so you don't have the imprint, the footprint that this one has, and the impact on the channel hydraulics. And then get somebody to look at the hydrant, you know, core. I'll run it past Ed. He's not here.
Was this 30-inch height on the exit section antenna the same as what we had in there before? Or was it the same?
It's going to be above the water.
It's above the water.
Okay.
Yeah.
as long as.
Yeah, I know. I didn't look at this. Was this the one we were postponing to October? And it is October.
Yeah. It was one that I sent it up or I sent out after the agenda.
Right.
I anticipated that it would be a 26th.
Well, the one that we were pushing ahead of us, that was for this month, or was that pushing? Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't expect it, which is why I said
first. Yeah, I just didn't.
So it sounds like, yeah, you'll have an update. People have a chance to get a hydraulic review in the meantime.
Yeah, it shouldn't take too long. I mean, that's, and then if Jeff is, you know, I mean, I think that from a hydraulic standpoint, I think that's pretty intrusive. So if you can get something thinner in there or hide that behind a,
maybe
a little bit and get some of that. It may be important just to get good data, you know, on something, because I wouldn't want this to stay in there forever. And if you're trying to get a condition, trying to get behavioral information on fish moving through that channel, and you change the channel other than what it normally would be, then you're not getting good information. You're biasing.
It could always be removed. There's something biases.
Okay, so when we talk about the picket leads, I'm going to bring that up too. There's so many biases. We just work around those.
I talked to John this morning. You try to control the ones you can.
Yeah.
You see if you can understand them. But
that's right, and you can adjust for them.
You know, one bias that I've been finding just the last couple of years, which I'm still puzzling, scratching my head over, is sockeye. I've been trying to use pit tag data to use mark recapture estimates upstream. And sockeye, the buckles tend to bounce all over the place if you look upstream. Theoretically, all the fish that are in the sinker, the fish should be going bottom middle upstream to Rock Island. They bounce around all over the place. Well, my mark recapture estimates are really pretty good till you get the last 2 years till you get to Rock Island, but I'm way underestimating wells in Rocky Reach the last 2 years, and way overestimating according to visual counts tumbler. Tumbler especially, I don't think they should be able to count the fish.
Right.
It's such a small ladder.
Right.
And we've now got some juvenile detection. We've got juveniles coming back from the Okanagan for the first time. Some pathway decent numbers are still kind of small. And what I'm finding from both that and then also the fish that Chris Caudell has tagged and moved downstream and where they end up, I'm finding the Okanagan fish seem to want to use that the Oregon ladder for some reason. And the Wenatchee fish want to use the Washington
rate.
Ladder.
So what you're saying is you need an AFF north, AFF south.
Yeah, I need one of both sides. but on the other hand, you would think that if there was such a bias going on, considering the bulk of the run is Okanagan, your Okanagan split should be similar to your overall split. And this, the Wenatchee should be screwed up. It seems like the Wenatchee is behaving kind of as if the dam count split suggests it should, while the Okanagan one isn't. So I'm kind of baffled by it, but there's a bias I really can't control. Of course, how important it is you've got dam counts. In this case, how important it is.
Because we know their dam count. There's problems with those dam counts, too.
You could always say recalibrate it upstream dam count or something, maybe do something different.
Well, I was just curious. You said earlier you were interested in looking at fish behavior based on the number of picket leads and so forth. Would you just use pit tag fish in the river, or would you put in special?
Just previously pit tagged.
I don't know.
It's hard. You can look at age. You can't really look real closely at it. I did that analysis for some of the picket lead bias things we've had in the past for the center divider. What we did earlier, just looking at jacks versus non-jacks with shuck.
Right.
You've got more pit tag fish out there now. You can certainly get enough to do one ocean, two ocean, three ocean chinook. Okay. Might be enough just to steal that.
If you think there's enough, I guess.
Okay. Okay, you need to wrap this one up. I think it sounds like we'll get another update in November on
some update on the
hydraulic review.
On the upstream detector and the downstream detector, he's clear to go ahead and get it in.
Okay, now we're working on the lower one, the upper one, the lower one. That's the important one.
Just a FYI, inquiry minds want to know. Yeah, now it makes some sense, now that I got your...
I'd love to know some of these questions. I'd love to know...
Transit time would be good to know. I agree with that.
had to find out.
Okay. Lisa, are you on the line?
I am.
Would you like to give the RCC update?
So starting to go around, it is 18 KPSS forecast for 5 days out at 22, and 10 days at 17.5. Canary yesterday averaged 103, 5 days down to 91, and 10 days out at 93. Congo yesterday averaged 106, forecasted in 5 days to be at 98, and 10 days at 100.
Bingo.
Thank you. All right. Is there anything to update on lamprey?
Yes. The lamprey has just been in Bonneville. They've adjusted 117,000 fish, which is the highest since 2011 when we started doing the adjusting counts. So that's daytime and nighttime LPS counts. The lamprey plume structure and John Day North LPS have been shut down for the season because of the trap and haul facilities. The number of fish are passing were so low, decided to shut those down. The other three lamprey passing structures in Bonneville will operate until early November, at which point those will go out of service and be dewatered. The lamprey quarterly awards meeting is coming up next week, so I'll be attending that and talking about one of the presenters.
Where is that meeting, Nathan?
Excuse me?
Where is the meeting?
Astoria.
Okay. Thank you.
Hey.
So the adjusted count you just mentioned, is that written up, the methodology and reasoning on how you got to that somewhere that we can keep it for future reference?
Yeah, so there's the letter report of the video adjustment will be coming out when I send out the actual count. So okay. It'll probably be... I don't want to guess because we've got to go back and rewatch some video. One, there's a couple of different systems we used, and one of them is the Sony Handycam. When you fast forward to Sony Handycam, it doesn't show you everything. It pulls out frames, which we found out the hard way. So when we did our QA, the stuff that we recorded, the one system was fine, the Handycam stuff, those counts were low. So if you had to go back and rewatch all of that, maybe it'd take a real time. It's super fun. But we got more accurate, so it's good.
Okay, any further comments on the lamprey update? How about avian? Any comments on avian specifically this month? I know we don't in Walla Walla have anything. I think we're just moving along. We did have an update on Ice Harbor that you had requested to the annual from Ken that came in. So
you adjusted up a month or whatever.
Yeah, we put it up on the FPOM website, I believe, didn't we, Tammy? We just received it in the last week. We had at the previous meeting asked for a couple things that he had not updated.
Right. And he's okay with those?
Yeah, he updated them. So I think we're good.
Good.
The next thing, John has tried to pick up the pieces that Ken left in terms of the critical infrastructure that we started over a year ago. And I guess just for your information, we do have a bigger process, at least within Walla Walla, where from a major maintenance standpoint, there is going to be this overview through time and they're working their way back to fish. So. A year ago, they did a condition assessment on a lot of the fish facilities. They're kind of in the process now of matching those up back at the project level. And so we anticipate there'll be in the future some larger process out there to track this.
Right.
And we've been asked, and I think we mentioned this before, to kind of back off to a minimum here. But John brought kind of what we had as an update so that you didn't feel like, you know, there was just totally smoke and mirrors going on out there. I think we still have a couple projects maybe where we don't have lists yet, though. So I'll turn it over to John.
So I have a list here. I've got a list from each project, and our old and new list, so you can compare them.
Okay.
And but also new is I went and got the five most critical things.
Old and new list is in what's old and what's new.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the past list and the updated one.
Oh, so these guys have never seen any lists.
Right.
Oh, you never
have. So I don't really want to see an old list. I just want to see
what's so what happened is a week ago, when John first looked at this, the Ice Harbor list was dated 2001. So that's what he was referring to. So now he has a 2014 list.
Okay.
No.
And nothing had changed.
Well, something had changed.
I don't know.
But anyway, we also got the project biologist view of the five most critical things.
Yeah, that's prioritization is the other part of it that's important. Yeah.
So anyway, I have this list to pass around.
Okay.
We were kind of thinking that we might put it up on the FPOM site.
Yeah, why don't you do that?
And then people could, you could take a look as you should choose. If you want more comment on it, we can process it
this
then.
This is all going to end up in the compost here, so.
Yeah. So we'll, John,
on Tammy and
electronically, we'll get it up on the FPOM site.
Okay. The other thing about it is, this is a list that's subject to change and it will be updated.
Yeah, we'll be able to do that on the website. Yeah.
But can you send an email out just saying that that's when it's
when
done,
it gets
so that's a reminder for us to go look?
Sure.
There's a lot of stuff on that webpage.
Yeah.
Which is good.
We might even send a link. We feel really nice, huh? Yeah. I think that's a great idea. I agree.
I put it in the October FCOM folder, so
okay.
It'll be
in the month. Okay.
Okay, great. BPA, did you have any updates today?
Nope, not today.
Okay. Keep it moving, I think the next...
I just want to throw out one thing. I'm sitting here.
Sorry.
I think as I go along here, but which is a problem for me. The avian issue, at some point, maybe when Burns back, I'd like to talk about the DALs again. And Bob, and this has to do with performance standards, attainment, and the future. So...
Well,
you've been talking
with
Langsley, right?
I've been talking with Langsley, yes.
Okay.
Quite a bit, so you know what's going on there. And that's been a condition that we're putting on that attainment, is that we maintain the level of harassment, hazing, whatever you want to call it, that was present back in 11, especially, 2011. So you're looking at me like...
I don't know that we need to wait for Byrne to come back for your message to go across is the other thing, because I mean there's no
I think it's more of a discussion just to make sure that we have everything that in the future. The money's been an issue. I'm trying to remember, and I don't exactly what we did, maybe Bob does in 11 in terms of boat hazing. I know we were trying to deal with John Day as well as the Dalles at that time, and so we had hazers running from dam to dam, and I don't know how much effort was at the Dalles, but...
Yeah, I'd have to look back at the records, because I know one year there was quite a bit where they came down and helped quite a bit early in the season.
Right.
But then they had to go back up to John Day when the birds showed up there, and then it seems to me the next season was like a couple days is all we got, and then to go back just to shore hazing.
Right. I would just want to make sure I'm not trying to... set up something that we can't afford or, that's unnecessary. It's just a matter of establishing what did we do in the 11, because the whole story revolves around that issue.
I guess some verification on that one, what we did.
Yeah, you can get when you borrow from John Day, because otherwise I have the work plans for what we paid for USDA and what we were supposed to do.
Yeah, let's just try to get what they actually did, because I just want it to be as effective. So whatever, we may base it on the number of birds that we see out there or saw out there at the time. I think that's something that Mike threw out as a future benchmark to try to maintain something.
How soon do you want to do that?
I'm just throwing it out there as an item, maybe for the evening update next month.
Okay.
And, this is going to go on for months.
Okay.
So.
So in 2011, beyond that, didn't we add more bird wires?
We did. We added wires, and we
so we had the hazing that you're saying is a preferred baseline for NOAA from the 2011. But then beyond that,
I want to make sure that beyond that, what
we added the bird wires in 12.
No, it was 11.
Was it 11?
11. Nothing changed after 11. So what I want to make sure is that when I'm hearing from Byrne that. It's a cost issue, and limited amount of money, and can we maintain? We need to maintain the effectiveness that we had in 11. That's all I'm saying. Whatever it is, whatever it was, we need to maintain the effectiveness of that. It doesn't have to be the exact effort. It has to be the effectiveness.
And that's the impact here, because when I'm looking at this, it's not how much hazing was done, it's what was the impact, what was the take associated with the birds, and how do we maintain
exactly
that level?
That's why I was like, was something added, was something changed, so it's getting at
that's
effectiveness.
That's what I'm trying to get at.
Since 11, we've had less birds.
Yeah.
Mother Nature.
Well, then.
Well, so that'll be part of his wrap-up that he brings back in November.
Right, so that's the issue. That's the issue, is 11 you had boats, and then after that, I know that when we were talking about the cost, Byrne was saying it's too expensive, the boats out there. My comment, if you go back to the records, was that, hey, you guys need to maintain what you had in 11. Now we're saying that again because you're coming to us and saying, hey, have we made it? And I'm saying, well, yeah, if, but you're, well, no, you didn't, really. Honestly, we missed Steelhead 1 year, but the story is that we missed Steelhead, but we did all the stuff, so we made it. So can you just kind of forgive us and ignore that? And we're saying,
yeah, yeah, we got 96%.
You had 95.3 for Steelhead.
95.3? I thought it was higher than that.
But you don't, we can't, we don't allow averaging. I mean, you basically missed it the first year. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a discussion of that because it's going to happen later, but you did miss it. And then you went out and did some work and made it flying colors, never mind that 11 was a flood year and we had all kinds of other things going on that could have caused that. But the story is that we, the Corps, being the Corps, went out and did this extensive wires, extensive hazing, boat hazing, and therefore we can forgive us those 0.7% miss and 10.
Yeah, I thought it was 96% or higher. I
don't
remember the 95.3, that doesn't ring a bell. But
well, look it up.
Yep. Well, it sounds like you have another meeting specifically for this, and then we'll have the November update where we can have some.
Yeah, for O&M, just we want to make sure that we maintain the effectiveness of the hazing. This other stuff's going to happen at a higher level. That's going to be a REOG level discussion, so it won't involve us.
So we're ready to move to the coordination forms at this point?
Among projects, yes, but not among years.
Okay, so the first one we're going to do is the Bonneville U1 testing. Oh, UI testing.
Yes, U of I. The University of Idaho would like to do really two different things. They want to go back into Bradford Island Circle King rear section where they took video for Lamprey Passage and take some velocity measurements. So that is scheduled for November of 2014. Also in November, they'd like to go to the North Downstream entrance and use a Vinson camera to try and determine what's going on with the entrained air coming out of that Lamprey Passage structure, or the flume structure, and is there a bubble curtain? They're just trying to essentially get some idea of what's happening in that area of that entrance. That's also planned for November 14th. And then January 15th, they want to pull this lovely boat around the entrance, and it's just underneath the water. They're going to have acoustic Doppler current profile.
When?
January.
Oh, okay. And that was in lieu of any cameras.
Right. 1 or 2 days for both.
Will the North Downstream entrance be watered up in January?
No.
So Washington Shore comes out this year. Mm. So everything after December
through 28 of February. So no problem.
Maybe they move it to November.
That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah, at the same time, right? It would make more sense.
I think it's all in the end of November is what I thought I read into that. I mean, I didn't see that until just before I was leaving, so maybe they changed it.
This was the newest one, right?
Yeah, that was in lieu of the video one of the cameras.
In coordination with this.
No, it wasn't that. It was in lieu of the ADCP. They were going to use that for ADCP because of the underwater sideways issue. Right.
The down-looking view, the sideways view from IV.
Right. So, and that was going to be done later, or in November, I thought. So.
Okay. I think they're also looking to find out the time that would be agreeable for people to do the work.
Yeah, midnight. No problem.
You're concerned about working at night for safety.
I hear it all the time. So what? Just put lights in there.
including the packet, some of the packets it goes on, as you can see through the season.
I don't want to see through the season. I hate that. I hate those.
In November.
Those are ridiculous.
Why is that?
Well, because you're talking about November, and you give me from January until December.
Which is why on the next page I give you November.
And 15 colors that I can't read.
Yeah, you don't need to know that.
In black and white.
That's why I said Chinook and Cohort in the upper lines. I know there's a lot of colors on there, but the point is...
There's about six different shades of blue.
The only people we really see are the Chinook and Cohort.
I didn't print it out. I was so worried.
I didn't have time to pick out six different patterns.
Why'd you give me six different patterns? I just want to see two. So but I want to see them for just the days. I'm going to be more of a stickler about these things.
I can give you a table if you'd like a table instead.
Well, I don't think this one's much. This isn't going to rise to the level of a concern. I think you're fine.
Any time the number's okay.
What? Yeah, for anybody else?
They wanted to do something.
Yeah, I see it's during the day and night, mostly night, but then I know they could actually adjust the ladder at night to full flow if they wanted to and capture the full length per second instead of the 4 foot per second condition. But so most of it's still at night from what I'm hearing.
Right. So let's hear, do any of the other reps have any issues with this coordination? Who's left on the phone, but since we're looking for concurrence on this, I think we do have other people.
Just
you okay, Dave?
Bradford Island is going to be out of service, so right. This will be the only letter that we have.
It will, yeah.
Bradford Island will be open?
Well.
Thank you.
And this is Carl. On that Gary letter, we were looking at the week of November 3rd. I found out the dying now will occur on November 10th. So later is actually even better than that week.
Hold us just a couple minutes, Carl. We're about to go into those forms.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if we still have anybody else on the phone in terms of the tribal reps, Idaho, Washington, or Oregon that have any other comment. We have a thumbs up from NIMS on this. And does anybody counter that?
No, this was, we're okay.
Thank you.
Sherry, we're okay with it.
Okay, thank you.
This is the service. We're okay, you're okay, we're all okay.
One big happy family.
Thank you. I'll try to live that. Okay, so I think we're done with that. Sounds like everybody's giving you approval. And then we're okay to move into the rest of the start of the schedule. So Carl, ladder outage for dives to recover camera equipment. We're looking for concurrence on that. That was sent out. That's where you just updated us that the date, rather than November 3rd, would now be November 10th.
That's right, yes. I just found out from the diet person this morning, or Ken Wong, that it's scheduled for November 10th. The third, they're behind a week basically on the diet stuff. But, you know, that's even better for us because there's fewer fish that week.
Yeah.
So instead of affecting 70 fish, it's probably going to be more like 50, I don't know.
So does anybody have any issues with this, or do people think that they can concur?
Well, just a little clarification. My understanding is that it will be 3 hours and the fish pumps will be off. Will there still be any water running through the ladder?
Yes. The fish pumps put out about 5,000 CFS, two fish pumps together. 2,500 apiece, and with the fish pumps down, you still have the 1,000 CFS Tinkerbell flow, you have the exit flow of 230 CFS, plus you have 450 CFS from the juvenile channel, so it's not like you're totally shutting the ladder down. And it probably is not going to be more than 3 hours. I scheduled between 1 o'clock and 6 o'clock just to be on the safe side, because when you shut fish pumps, yeah, it takes a while to shut them down, it takes a while to bring them back up. The dive itself probably takes less than an hour, but while we have the pumps down, we also plan to get in there and start that floating orifice swap early. That's already been approved by FPOM, but we weren't planning to start until this winter, but we got shoot as long as we have the ladder down, let's get started on it. So we blockade one floating orifice and
5 hours.
Right.
So
yeah, less than five. And just one time, one day.
Right, yeah. Right. So just think about that in the future. There are folks out there that don't read things carefully.
Yeah.
We're looking for a 4 hour outing sometime within the day for things would have been.
Yeah.
That's about right, yeah.
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 Oh, thank you.
Yeah, Russ, one thing I asked for, and I think I'd like to see these on all these kind of proposals, is just an analysis that looks at the impact a little more in detail than just throwing a bunch of graphs and tables of data and stuff out there. And Carl did a great job here, I think, in coming back with an analysis that would clarify what you're talking about, because he does specifically say 5 hours, and he use that to estimate the number of fish that could possibly be delayed for that outage based on the records. So,
right.
I mean, I think that's a great approach, because then it gives us, I mean, I'm going to ask for that every time, because it gives us a chance to see what the effect is, the take, if you will, as a result of these outages. So,
I read and understood it, and I agree with you, Gary. I just was recommending that up front, you know, listed the date range that it would occur.
Right.
And some folks misinterpret that as being an outage for that date range.
Yeah, no, I see your point.
For a few hours within that range.
Allows people to make a bit of a knee jerk. I understand.
I understand.
But
yeah,
I
don't feel bad.
Yeah, and I'm just carrying it to another level. I think that all these coordinations need some, and we have said this in the past, this is not new, it's just that it's, we say it, and then it kind of slides off the radar screen for folks, but I'm not asking for a major analysis. It's just a matter of looking at the number of fish that you know the 10-year record would suggest, or maybe the more recent records, maybe just the last couple of years, given what kind of year we're having, would suggest that you would have out there and what kind of impact you might have. It's just a little bit more than just saying we're going to do something and, you know, it's going to happen during these dates and there may be some fish impacted. That's not enough. But just an estimate of impact, I think, is important. I know you can't estimate how many fish are going to die or what the ultimate spawning success is going to be or any of that stuff, but this helps us in making sure that the RPA is being met.
Okay, so it sounds to me like we have concurrence on this. Does anybody want to counter that they don't agree?
Yes. This is an easy one.
Okay, so let's move to your next one, Carl, which is the fish pump outage for electrical upgrade.
Right, and this time we're talking a half hour, very short term. Basically up, make the switch, and down again, or down, make the switch, fish pumps up again. If this were just maintenance, it would just be covered under the fish passage plan, but since it's more than maintenance, it's actually an electrical upgrade, it's required to be reported and, you know, run by that pump.
You already got my answer.
And in this case, I calculated, I think, three fish. Gary calculated 2.4, a little tongue-in-cheek there. And I was trying to figure out these counting numbers we get to the fish passage center. You know, they count for 16 hours a day. Is there a factor in there that brings it up to the 8 hours of not being counted? I'm just curious if anybody here knows. I'll have to check with them and see.
Well, they get their numbers from our counts. And so, I don't know, John, do you want to comment on that, Carl, or...
Well, part of the thing is, this is Carl again, part of the thing is that we know that the fish counter takes 10 minutes off per hour, and that hour is upgraded for those 10 minutes as if they hadn't been gone.
Right.
You know, the data is extrapolated from 50 minutes up to 60 minutes for each hour, and I'm just curious if we're extrapolated from 16 hours up to 24 hours for each day.
No.
No, we're not.
No. No, it's just 16 hours or 8, depending on time of year. So it's just, let's report it.
Yeah, it is important.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's to clarify that, you know, any place where we're doing night counts, that was to fill in the fact that we previously weren't getting any indication. We were always assuming it was null. So, okay, sounds like you're good to go, unless there's anybody that I didn't give a chance to comment out on the phone.
Yeah, I'm here, but I'm going to start to say this. I'm going to call on you for a write-up. I thought you did a good job on that. I think Gary's comment, that kind of detail is really helpful a lot. So thank you.
Okay, thanks, Charlie. Anybody else have any comments?
We'll just make sure we do it that way from now on.
Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Okay, next one is Little Goose 12. John, you're covering this.
This one has to do with Little Goose bus station, SQ0, bus 2. This one supplies power to the three fish pumps in the supply water to the lower ladder and also the controls for the ladder. They're installing a new transformer at Little Goose, and they need to disconnect the equipment from the old transformer and hook it up to the new one. They estimate 3 hours would be needed to complete the job. So what that means in terms of fish ladder operation is that the only flow in the ladder would be the 75 cubic feet per second that comes in from the top, gravity feeds to the bottom, and the collection channel would be basically a lake. There would be no pumps running to push water out the entrances and provide a traction flow, but the ladder itself would be operating, so any fish are in that section of ladder could still go up the ladder. But anyhow, this coordination point doesn't set a particular time frame, but I would presume it would be after the morning hours when adults get active.
We did get a comment yesterday from Bill. Bill's preference was for the tail towards the tail end of the date range and afternoon hours.
Right.
So
you're looking at November 3rd to 13th of the time frame and the coordination point there.
Right.
But so, you're saying
I'd like to see it more like November 13th or later. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess I think that's a great place to start. I guess for those that are in the room, be it Fish and Wildlife Service or BPA, do either of you have comments on that date? Could you work with the 13th that's been suggested?
Go ahead.
That works.
Yeah, I think that the date range works, and we were going to suggest the same thing as the afternoon to evening hours.
Okay.
So after 1 o'clock, you're saying? Something like
that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How about on the phone, Russ? You good with the 13th in the afternoon?
Yeah, that'll be okay.
Charlie? Catherine?
Yeah, I don't have any comments.
Okay. Sherry?
I'm fine.
Tom?
I guess I'll get a comment.
Hey, Ann, I'm going to hear it again. I think we're over that. 13 is a better use than 30. We're okay with it.
All right. Tom, were you going to comment?
Well, sounds like it's fine. I don't know enough about it, honestly.
So the deal is that this is kind of at the tail end of adult passage. They have some work that they'd like to get done. They need to kind of put a mark out and schedule their contractor. They have something in progress. They're hoping to get it done and get it scheduled. And so the feedback we're currently taking based on the round robin we just did would be the preferred date would be the 13th in the afternoon hours into the evening.
Yeah, I think that's it for all the nerds
down. Okay, thank you, Tom.
Conference.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. It's the conference line is really fun.
It sounds to me like the group thinks that that'll work, right? Certainly.
Okay.
Hey, Tom, we're just trying to minimize the any fish in the tail range during those 3 hours.
We got to thank whoever's doing
that. Is this work going to be weather dependent?
It was not briefed in there that it was weather dependent.
Okay, so you can just go ahead.
Yes.
Could you tell me again what the gravity feed is?
Yeah, the upper part's gravity feed on there. No pumps.
Yeah, how much?
75 cubic feet per second on the upper ladder.
That might be something.
That's
going to say that might be something to put in the notice next time too, exactly what kind of flows we're expecting.
Yeah, we're still transitioning between a permanent bio at Lake East. We've been expecting to get one for a while, and we haven't quite got there, so we're a little short. We have, yeah. Anyway, mentioned.
That's
I think we're trying to work with people on descriptions and helping them to better communicate to the larger group the specifics so that people can readily read these, understand, and make a decision. And that is a challenge at this point for some of the people that we have at our project. So we'll continue to work with them on that.
That's fine.
So, yeah, comments are welcome. Okay, next one is the Dalles Adult Attraction Spill Test.
A stunning success. Except for the rather stupid decision that was made in the middle of it to change
that. No, that was a good decision. That was a good decision to try that other powder.
Thank you.
We saw some concerns in the field.
Now we
know. Now we know.
It supports what we saw earlier. We had a decision point earlier. So it should go below 6.
Oh, we had it. It was in my notes, you know, yeah, just know, as like plain as complete. Don't do this. Yeah. But I was sitting out here at Bonneville when I made the decision, so.
Yeah, so anyway, the breakdown for the test, you know, Gary sent out a profile memorandum that presented everything pretty well, and the bottom line was, you know, the week leading up to the treatment period, you know, our all showed steel and coho passage ranged from 2 to 7% through the north ladder, and during the first 4 days of our treatment, when we had the erdic pattern, we were in the range of 15 to 20% at the north ladder. The following 3 days, we're right around 12% for the north ladder, and then the week following our test period, we were back down in the 4 to 8% range.
Now, there was certainly a response. Chinook looked like they were most sensitive to the change we made in the pattern. The Bay 1, they really, really dropped off, which was should have been a surprise, I guess, based on the model that we saw in the model. But it's still a surprise based on the small change we made that they would be that sensitive.
Yeah.
But I guess they are. So, you know, that really showed up. We don't want to do that. Still like to see, you know, it would have been nice to look at the two-bay pattern just to see how that worked, and we didn't get a chance to do that this year, so something to think about for next year.
So are you guys going to reconvene this subgroup to talk about the result?
That's
I'm not
annoying,
sure
yeah.
if somebody needs to mute their phone. Ever since we've had some discussion on the last topic, we've been getting a lot of static here.
10-4.
Okay, thank you. So,
well, Bob's our fearless leader. So, do you think carry this forward?
I think so. Yeah. Again, next year.
Start
so,
talking about.
Well,
I think that we. I mean, obviously, we do need to do that because we haven't talked through the entire issue of triggers and when we would do this. I think it worked. I think we were able to move fish. I mean, it's not as many as I would like to have seen, but it did help. And it helped right on top of the peak run last year, so that was the thing that that I like to see. It also shows that our operation is very sensitive. The fish response is sensitive to exactly what we're doing there. So two things remain, I think. One's to develop some sort of a trigger. Mm-hmm. When would we try to do this to reduce? And that really, that's just an east ladder issue. Just the east ladder. What do we think is too much for that? Then we would do something like this. What we would do then, I think, is still a little up in the air. Obviously, the 15 worked with the pattern that we had, but we don't know if we couldn't do better with a slightly different pattern. So we know it's sensitive. We know we don't want to go one direction, but can we go a different direction and get better acceptance of that interest? Yeah,
we still need a lot of work to figure out what's overcrowded.
Yep.
Yeah,
we haven't got there yet.
I think if we want to test something in the future, we should go with the alternative pattern. We would better agree to our second highest.
That was not used this year, right?
It was not used this year.
Right.
It was bay 1 and 2.
It was bays 1 and 2.
Yeah, 7.5 K.
Yeah, 7.5 inch. Total of 15 K.
Okay, so same amount of flow.
Yeah, but it's just more flow per bay.
Yeah. Okay. You know, with the response we saw with the reduction in flow out of bay 1, I wonder, that might be key for bringing fish in that water.
Yeah.
So what you said for next year potentially was bay 1 and
1 and 2,
at 7 about?
Yeah, at 7.
7.5 I think
was. And then bay 7 and 8 another 15, so totally 3.
You're not laughing.
That was a tongue
cut. She's just staring at me.
She could control the static on here. We would have heard a big...
But what's the metric?
Charlie. No, we don't.
Go ahead.
What's the metric? I'm just going, what's the metric? Is it a travel time? Are we looking to reduce travel times? Or is it just density? Density is bad, so we just got to reduce density? Or
I think it's density. Well, all the above.
It's like you've attended all the subgroup meetings. That's one of the of the basic questions that we have that we want to flush out. So that's why I'm asking if we're going to continue the subgroup.
Yes.
Because
we absolutely have to.
Yeah. And that those questions feed into the trigger
issue. Sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, there's travel times and look fine.
So do we have a problem?
That's one of the questions.
I think I should be on the subgroup.
I think you have been part of the subgroup.
Well, I was part of the wall design, so.
So this was to determine how to fix the problem. This is just in case we do see a problem. And we have some. We already know that something works.
That's Charlie. He's got his.
Charlie, are you muted?
Well, it almost sounds like we got a two-way radio conversation kicking in here.
I'm
here, so I
don't
know where
it's
coming from, but...
Okay, thanks.
I think
it was you and Carl were some of the last speakers, and we were trying to figure out who it might be.
It does sound like a two-way... Something's getting picked up.
Okay.
Breaker.
That's on you.
Okay, thanks, guys. Sorry to make any jabs at any individuals. It seemed like it was getting pretty hard for people to hear, though.
Everyone,
put your phone on mute unless you're speaking.
Aye, aye.
We'll see if that works.
So you won't hear us because we're going to put ours on mute. No. Okay. So it sounds to me like the subgroup is going to continue and work out some of the details. Yeah. So that's, I think we're tidied up with this topic, aren't we? Okay. So we have a couple more things to get through. Fish counts. Robert, I think are you going to lead this discussion?
Yeah. Just wanted to bring up, most of you are aware, we send out these split count reports, basically clipped, unclipped to various agencies. I'm not sure exactly what they use the information for, but because of the large numbers of salmon going through Bonneville, there were a few instances where our staff noticed that the counter said, hey, there's so many fish this hour, I can't do my index hour, so I'm going to stop. They try to. So it's probably going to interfere with their normal counting. And that's good, but it brought it to our attention, like, well, why did this counter have that problem and this other counter didn't? So we looked into it, and sure enough, the numbers looked like other counters were doing the same thing, but just not commenting to us that they were doing that. And then we looked up and down the river, and it was happening at multiple sites, and even the Snake Project, which counts, split counts all the time, they weren't doing the coho consistently. It looked that way. So anyway, long story short, we told Greg Moody, and you know, short term he's obviously going to tell Mormon and get it down to people, please let us know if you're not following the contract plan. But it brings up the issue that whatever we've sent out to the agencies, they're not that comfortable with. John looked all the way back to the spring, and there's where it looks like we had problems back then. So the question you might want to think of in the future, though, how important are these split counts, particularly at Bonneville and some of the Columbia River dams, when we're getting a larger number of fish going by and are having a difficult time making these counts? Do we want to come up, I hate to use the word trigger, but do we want to come up with some level where, hey, you know, they just can't do it? Or they want to keep forcing them to do it or try to do better, or at least let us know in the county about it. But I don't know that we're going to be able to come up with any kind of a correction factor because it seems to be all on the board.
So these are clipped, unclipped counts for.
This is terrible.
Steelhead?
Yeah, they're doing that all the time. But these are for adult Jack Chinook and adult Jack Paul. And it's four more buttons for them to have to count. And when you get, you know, 6,000 to 10,000 fish going by in an hour, it's just that much more to have to try to remember what they're doing and hit the right buttons. And they're supposed to hit always live Chinook or the unclipped Chinook during the non-index hours, but they're not even doing that. So it makes it difficult for us to query and find out and make these reports. So what's an accurate ratio? So anyway,
yeah, it comes back to what the data being used for. I know Steelhead, I mean, that is the one thing that we look at, Steelhead.
Right. And we're doing that, and I think they're used to doing that, so it's not that
that's
much
pretty,
of an issue.
There's not that many steelhead out there, but right. When you have a lot of other fish to look at, they're still
right. And they're used to doing that. It's a muscle memory thing. So these index counts, a lot of times they forget to do it, and again, sometimes they'll tell us, but sometimes they won't, and they'll just do it on another hour. But our query system will just pick up the 10 o'clock and the 5 o'clock hour, so if they don't tell us, you know, it's going to bias the data. If they tell us we can exclude it, everything's fine.
Right.
So part of it is, you know, tele-encounters, please let us know.
Yeah.
But it just brought up another issue because we have so many fish going by this year. You might want to think about it if it does start to affect the accuracy of the models.
Robert, you said it was the problem was with coho jacks and something else?
It's Chinook and coho.
Chinook and coho.
Hey, Ann, this Russ.
Yeah, Russ.
This is too hard to listen to. I'm going to have to hang up. Sorry.
We've already hang you up. Anyway.
I'm afraid it's really hard at this end as well, Russ. And so maybe what we need to do, I don't know what folks think, we could try a different line if we thought that would be more successful. We do have a different conference line number that we could have, give people, just take a quick break and give people 5 minutes to recall in.
We can try that.
Okay, so let's do that. Let me go slowly through and tell you what the conference line number is. So everybody shut up and I'm gonna tell you what the number is. 877-810-9415. And then the access code is 188-5037. And the security code is 188-5037. So the access and the security code are both the same. And the conference line number, one more time, is 877-810-9415. So let's hang up now, and we'll activate that line.
Okay.
You forgot to tell them to put their ATM and PIN number in there.
Did you hear that while I was doing that, there was no beeps? Like, there is something somewhere that somebody's...
Yeah.
Maybe it's like some
when you took
people
command,
have those
stop.
Headsets and stuff like that. That might have.
It was kind of interesting, but you know who's talking when I'm saying don't say anything? It's charming. Mm-hmm. And you really don't know.
I know. raised that problem in the past.
He's on the field.
Yeah, doing some sort of, like line effect. How do we put this on speakerphone, though? Oh, okay. It always is. We're sort of towards the end.
Close to the end.
Could have turned these off. The problem won't work.
No, I don't think it's that problem.
Yeah.
I like the fact that nobody left. F-POM never breaks. Once you get started, you just keep fighting through it.
We just go through it.
You've got to go get out. Go back.
We close the doors. Say, QuickBase Commerce system is pretty good.
It is, yeah. Well, it's kind of weird.
Better than those. It's got a menu of
available. It's got microphones. Your system, just as the beep system, it's not the...
Yeah, we won't hear people enter or leave.
Somebody is actually that crap.
That line is brutal. We can use this line if we want more in the future. It's really obnoxious when somebody's talking to have somebody joining and leaving.
Yeah. Especially if they say their name. I just never do that because I know it's obtrusive.
Dan, come back and go back from Saturday.
Great.
This is Catherine.
Thanks. Okay, thank you, Catherine. Russ? Is that you, Russ?
This is Bill.
Oh, hi, Bill. So we've got three of you back. I think we'll wait. We've still got Sherry, Tom, Russ. But we seem to have, be so far so good, fingers crossed, lost our static.
Well, it sounds like a lot better line.
Yeah. This is a wall-to-wall line, you know, versus a Portland line.
I was waiting for that.
Unfortunately, they're both the Corps of Engineers.
Yeah.
Provided by the Holy Spirit.
Don't say that. Haven't you ever heard how the East Side wants to set themselves apart and be different?
I know. Every platoon in the Army, every platoon thinks they're better than the other.
Yeah, Wall of Wall is just Portland East.
Until you're at war, and then you need the other platoon, and then you all come together.
That was a while back. That was when Smitty moved out there, and Marvin and all those guys were going out there.
Marvin still wears a shirt.
Does he?
Okay. Who else have we gained any of the other reps? Russ, Cherry, Tom? Okay. Let's give Russ another second here, and then we'll continue the discussion on the fish count issue. And we may have to maybe start with a summarization and where we want to go. Uh-oh, who just joined or made that?
I just made that.
Wow. Lisa, are you at a truck stop? you're a noise factor that's just entered the call. Okay, that's
right.
Hi, Russ. Okay. The only one we don't have back is Tom, and who knows, with all the noise, he didn't say he was coming back. So what we'd like to do is summarize the fish count that Robert Stansel was discussing and kind of lay out a path forward. And so I know it was difficult to hear, so Robert's going to try to kind of summarize, start out his issue real clearly what the issue was, kind of summarize his findings, and then I'll let him, I'm not going to stop putting words in his mouth, I'll let him tail it up.
We basically found that the split count report that we're putting out weekly is not very reliable, at least for 2014, probably for all projects. varying degrees. So Normanville is going to be notified, and hopefully the counters will do better. But we just want to let you guys know, you should probably let your agency reps know where it does get these split counts, that they aren't reliable. Hopefully in the future we'll get them more reliable. And if you guys want to think about it in the future, if we continue to get large numbers of fish passing, it may become an issue because these counters are having a difficult time doing these index hours, particularly on the Columbia River projects, and keeping the accuracy of all the other counts going. I think that's why we stopped these back in the early 2000s anyways, because I think when we had the 2001-2002 high counts, I think Ann Stevenson brought it up to this group and started those discussions like we're having a tough time in the index county. I think we started in 2007. All right. So anyway, something to think about. Just let you guys know that we are not comfortable with 2014 index counts. Yeah.
So is there just one index hour count per 24, or how many?
No, typically we do 2, 10 o'clock, 5, 4 o'clock.
So 10 a.m. and 4 p.m.?
Yeah.
And again, just to reiterate, it was primarily with Coho and Chinook Jacks.
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
So, Robert, is that something you're going to send out as a...
Well, I can ask, do you want something written up on that?
It'd probably be a good idea, because I don't know who to talk to about this in our agency, so folks are going to need to see that, and I'm wondering if it shouldn't be something that was identified on the account page. Could it be identified on the account page?
Yeah, that would probably be good.
Because that's where people are always looking, and if there was something there that said,
we'll write something up that we can attach there, but we'll also send it out to this group. Defining what I've
right, just to, yeah, exactly. So we can pass it on to somebody else who knows more about that than I do.
As well as maybe a comparison of anything that's changed since 2013. So if you were comfortable, I mean, I hear you say 2014, but well, I hear that we haven't had a process change in a long time.
We haven't looked farther back.
Okay, so I think we need to understand whether or not it really is unique to this year. That's my only message.
Okay.
So I'm going to put this out there.
We can do that.
Because if it's always been random noise in there,
it's consistent.
Then maybe less.
Depends
than
on how the data are used.
Right.
Relative or absolute.
Yeah.
We'll take a look.
Okay. So, thank you.
So that'll come back to this group.
Yes, I'll send something out. Tammy can spread it out.
Thanks.
This is Kathy. Could you, in the write-up, be sure you emphasize what it is that you feel was inaccurate about?
Yeah, there's several different categories. I'll put that all in there.
Great.
And then once this goes out, if people have any further questions or comments, just let us know, and then you can be available probably for November FPOM or written comments back.
One foot out the door.
Yeah, we have to catch Robert fast before the end of the year. And then Bob gets to answer all those questions. Okay, if there isn't any further comment, I think we'll keep moving.
Not very well.
We have a BPA updating FPP change board 14 bond 001. Are you wanting to address that or have
I have not heard
so
any updates from
out.
Scott on that. Kick
okay.
it out.
Kick it out to November.
Okay.
Well, just so that you're all thinking about what it is that Scott wanted look at the change form, because the way it's written, the project does not operate Powerhouse 2 above the minimum until it goes through all those steps. So he was thinking perhaps in October we could change the date or discuss it so that the project could operate Powerhouse 2 above the minimum. Is that
the reason? Because I was looking at the change form and I didn't really see the request. Whatever we're calling it. I didn't see much reason to change anything.
Yeah, it's allowing Powerhouse 2 to operate above the midpoint earlier than what the change form allows.
October 31, it says.
Yes.
Now, so folks want to talk about 1st of October or something like that?
Yeah, and that's what you relayed to me on the phone, but hopefully they'll have more detail.
Yeah, and he's getting more detail on that.
This is Scott that's working on that.
This
okay, so that's the area he wants to look at. Okay.
So there'll be some follow-up. Yep. It sounds like there'll be some email traffic and maybe a discussion.
Yep. I'm making the assumption that this is the last change form that we had on this. This is dated March 29,
13. The one that you pulled off the...
I did. It came straight off of here.
It's March 29.
March
29. Yes.
Yeah.
That should be.
That's the final. Okay.
Okay. Other change forms. I think that's where we're moving. We've got 15 bond 002 turbine startup.
This is for maintenance testing.
From 30 to 60 minutes.
That's so bad. We're increasing the start time from 30 to 60 minutes because they believe that the operators will need 60 minutes in order to go through the process before it's fully online. So we just want the FAQ to reflect what's actually
the reality of operation.
Yeah, this is a little bit messy. There are the load shaping guidelines as well in the fish passage appendix, whatever. And those guidelines, which were worked out a long time ago, allow 15 minutes to 8 hours for routine turbine testing to be outside of the 1% range. So technically, it's already in there.
Okay.
And I'm a little worried that people don't know the load shaping guidelines are even in there. So people need to look back at the projects and look at those load shaping guidelines and see how those fit. Because we should be reflecting in the body of the plan what that appendix says. That thing goes back to the early 1990s when we worked that out. And that's kind of the grandfather operation for peak efficiency in the system. So anything that we do should be consistent with that, or we should have exceptions made, you know, specifically.
All right, so let's hold off on our change.
Yeah, that's there was some.
You see whether you need it, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know whether you need it, but there is one other issue in here, and that's the speed and the load, and that's not covered. And that's what I wanted more information on too, is how long the speed and the load is definitely a problem. That's I'm not a good situation for fish in a turbine unit, so I didn't know what that meant in terms of how long we were running the speed and the load.
Okay, so we'll further review and come back with this one.
Yeah, because I think you're okay with the 60 minutes, really. That's covered. The 3 hours to flush makes sense. I don't see anything there that would be a problem at all. I just want to make sure that we're consistent with the load shaping guidelines.
Okay, so maybe November?
So that's one thing, is the change forms are due to the districts, the internal ones, by the early part of November, so we can update the draft FPP and make sure the region has time to review it by the end of December, I think.
Have we set a time for the Appendix A stuff yet either? That's the one that slides way out that people have had the concern for us updating.
It's always supposed to be in by our FPP meeting in January,
okay.
But I know Walla, and sometimes they just don't have the information until just before it's printed. And you guys treat when they say differently.
Okay, so maybe we can see what we can do to tighten up over at our end if we're the issue there. It seems like it really slides late. It slid really late last year, and it's really hard for people to say that they've had a good review on it.
They usually don't. That's always been a problem.
That's the whole reason for doing it, is to allow people up front that review.
You don't have to go back and re-coordinate.
So what's the next steps on this? So you're okay, Gary, with 60
minutes? I'm okay with
the
60 minutes. I mean, that's something that we've allowed in load shaping guidelines for years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good with the 3 hours of flushing. That's really a no-brainer for me. But the speed no load, it's nothing unusual. You do it all the time. You have to for some point. But I don't know how long we're talking about running speed no load for testing. Usually you wouldn't be doing that. or anything below the 1% range. I mean, we've looked at above 1%, we're good with that. You know, so sticking within the band is not that important, but going below, that's where we get into problems, and especially Powerhouse 2. It's pretty ugly in those units once you get in the lower, you start starving those units. It does not look good over there. So I don't know what, I would want to limit that. It was as minimal time as possible for whatever the testing needs to be. And if I don't have anything that says, you know, it's a half hour is enough or too much or an hour or anything like that, but just to know that speed no load is not a good operation for fish.
But it doesn't seem like that was the part of the change form that is changing.
No, it just popped out of there. I was reading it, and it's actually, that's
so it's something that's
the original,
seems to
the
be,
language.
Yeah. Have occurred in the past.
It just kind of came up and decided, focused on it and went, well, okay, that's not good.
But the frequency of these kinds of things going on, is it's pretty infrequent, is what I'm...
Well, every time that you're doing maintenance, right, when you're bringing a unit back up after maintenance, you got to go through this testing operation. So characterizing that, I guess, a little bit would be a good idea. I mean, if the speed no load is just a short duration, minutes, that's no problem. But if it gets into hours for whatever reason, I don't know why you would do that, but that would be a problem during the fish
season. Yeah, maybe this is Lisa. Is there anything in Appendix C about the speed no load, or is that not covered at all?
Really isn't covered. Sorry, Lisa, where were you talking about?
In the load shaping guidelines, do they actually talk about
no?
Okay,
no.
So we'll have to actually...
Yeah, I mean, those were developed, they say, that was the early 90s, I believe, that we did that. So that's, we've learned a lot since then. That whole thing, that appendix could be updated. It should be, actually. That's a BPA NOAA issue. Because there are some inaccuracies in it now, I think. And it wouldn't be a bad thing to go back and look at that, particularly for Bonneville.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are we ready to keep moving?
For Bonneville Dam, I mean.
I knew that. I knew. That was clear.
This is another Bonneville DSM Orifice Control Table Bond 7.
Yeah, so there's a table in the FED that shows orifice openings and closings based on floor bay level. And what I discovered this spring is that the orifice controlled by the channel elevation and the animal water. So the actual four-way level has no direct control over the opening and closing of the orifice gates, which...
But it does. I mean, that's the way it was designed as one of the designers. The four-bay, it was meant to follow four-bay directly. Four-bay head from relevance caused by four-bay is what puts more flow through the orifices, which is what either starves or floods that channel. So it is directly related to the four-bay, but maybe we're just splitting hairs here too, because if you guys are running it based on the channel is going to, or the orifices are going to respond directly to the head of the four-bay.
Yes.
And that's the way it was designed. I mean, the whole thing goes, those orifices go on and off based on four-bay. I mean, that is the direct result. That is what causes them to go on and off. So,
and it's the channel sensor.
That's where the sensor is. Right.
Channel to trigger.
So if that's the way you're running, that's fine, but it's just a bit of an inaccuracy in how it's characterized, because it is directly tied to the four-bay, directly. And that's how it was designed. But the end result is the orifice had more flow, therefore the channel has more flow, and you need to turn on or turn off orifices.
It may be useful to leave the table in there for the time when Gary retires and we have new.
That's because of the way you guys have set it up. Yeah.
You're right, the sensor's in the channel, it's not in the four-bay.
Yeah.
But as Gary said, the four-bay
dictates
the head going to the orifices in their ore. That's how it's
Yeah, I mean, it is direct, but not in the terms of your electronic wire.
The control is direct, yeah. The monitoring is indirect.
Yep. So it's just, people could get misled by that, I think, a little bit. But it's just the justification, so that's fine.
So we good to keep moving?
Yep.
Okay, the next one is the fog sleds. So fogs are floating orifice gates, sea lion exclusion devices.
Just trying to remember.
This one didn't make sense.
I believe it's keeping the sleds in year round. Right now, they're required to be removed, which is fairly time consuming. It takes a few days for our crews to do it.
This one didn't make sense to me. I mean, I know what you're trying to achieve, but the language, Brian's language here, I just got lost in. I started making edits on it.
There's
so,
about that. So I think that it was updated on the MPP site.
Oh,
was
it
different language?
Okay. Because it said something to the effect that it's still removed by August 1, but yet it can be left in year-round, and you're like, well, what is it? So I started.
But the intent is just to keep the fog sleds in year-round.
Yep, that's fine. Okay. That's fine, if we just make it clear.
Okay, that doesn't sound like anything anybody else would have concerns on outside of the room. B branch entrance gates.
That one is just a clarification of reality.
This
so.
One. This one's.
Yeah.
I was reading it, I was like, wait a minute.
So that's what today at Bonneville is about, is really understanding what goes on versus what we have written down.
Well, I think Brian had the wrong gates on some of this. And then I saw that there was another one that came out. Another edit, which made more sense to me.
Yeah.
So I think it's right now, but this one.
If it says SO, that's B branch. SW is cascade.
Yeah, but 4 was wrong. Or, you know, he had 4 on there, I think, on one of them. And then he changed it to 3. It didn't follow.
Basically, we'll make sure that the drawings and the verbiage are correct, but
yeah.
The important thing to note is that the north entrance stays open.
Okay, so going back to that, Schlenker has some feeling about this, but what I didn't see was any kind of analysis that...
Well, it's in the... I think what the problem was originally in the original language is in the Hellcraft's report, there's a section in the text that spells out these entrance gates, and it identifies these gates as SWs for B branch, where the plates in the Hellcraft report identifies them correctly as SO gates. So we're trying to clean up the labeling, essentially, the operation in the north.
What happens is
there's 4 gates.
Cascades Island, it used to be that the north one would close first. So if you switch the Cascades Island labeling with the Bradford Island labeling, then you would get those out. Basically, the ladder is operating how Schlenker wants it to operate. The SVP did not reflect.
Yeah, it needs to get the language right. I mean,
yes.
On the Cascade Island side, we have 1 main entrance. That's it.
Yes.
That's it. Nothing else. So everything else is done.
B
branch, we have one or the other is open at certain tailwaters, and then they're both open or they're closed. And that needs to be laid out. Okay.
And
that's, as Schlenker's got something that's... Okay. Is there documentation for Schlenker's north versus south? Just to make sure the people who come after I retire understand what the heck this is all about.
I have an email.
You have an email in writing. Okay. Well, that should go into something. Attach it to this. And there's where then you'll have a record. So that we don't go down the road 10 years and then go, gosh, I know that fish unit was off. I wonder what that was. Yeah, we'll have this kind of things documented.
So for these that were all reality checks, are you guys gonna update these and resend them out to folks so they understand the discussion today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Excuse me, Tammy, I got completely confused. So in the plates that are in the Fish Passage Center, are they correct?
In the Fish Passage Plan?
for the passive plan? Sorry.
Don't even try to do that, Dave. You'll just get, it's, I give up too.
Totally confused.
Don't even try. There's two versions of this thing. The first one didn't make any sense. The second one, I'm not sure it does either. But as long as we're, as long as you guys can figure it out so that the project knows that you don't run the Cascade Islands, those gates, you run the B branch in a certain way.
Huh.
Closed. Oh.
Okay. I think the only other change form for us that was out there is the one that was 8110, and that was the Ice Harbor end date needed to be updated, and the Corvée Cormorant counts. And that's what I mentioned earlier that Ken had updated,
yep.
And I
We're
believe
good
we have that back out on the FPOM website.
Thank you.
Okay. FPP
website. You don't want to cover all these others in the middle here? You can talk about that for a couple hours.
That's
kind of like the Ice Harbor.
Plenty of time in the future to have further discussion on
those. Sounds like it's going to be a whole lot like Ice Harbor operations,
right.
You know, which spill
right.
level we're going to have.
Yeah.
Go on for hours.
It goes on and
it'll go on long after you might think you're going to retire, and then you'll spend years helping us work through this.
Okay.
And so, you know, you'll be around a lot longer. No, you just will never. You won't want to leave.
It'll be in my nightmares forever.
Engaged. Yeah.
So
you might want to consider moving away.
I am.
<It's getting>
sooner. Sooner than later.
You selling that boat?
You want to buy it.
Potential FPP change forms, is that something you want to talk about? Or is
no.
that just for awareness?
That is for awareness. Ideas for why we need to change the FPP, and then when
yeah.
they get a change form, they will remember why they're getting that change
form.
Okay.
Like,
well, the AFF pickets are something that we can tackle, and we should, and there's a subgroup to do that, so that should be a group that gets reinvigorated.
Do you want to go through the AFF mods task group?
I think it needs to be brought back to life. To deal with that particular issue.
Yeah, I was talking with the like yesterday with Alan Morris and Stuart, and they were talking about it. And,
yeah.
And what to do with that.
I assume you guys aren't just totally picky, totally peachy keen with this. That you're.
Well, the no pickets we don't like, but the what I've seen for Dibbler, it's as a strange. I expected no pickets, we wouldn't get anything.
Yeah, you got a lot of fish. Yeah.
I'm just always, again, the whole bias issue worries me. Like, even if you put it down for just a few minutes, send a slug in, seems better to me than just volitionally.
Maybe.
Fish to go in.
What we just need to do is to have somebody take a shot at.
Picket leaf language?
Yep. I'm just looking to see who it is.
Yes.
Oh, John.
I'm
looking for. Oh, yeah?
Oh,
we did, from way back, yeah, when you did that. From
way back, from last month.
Right, way back. That's way back to me. Things change fast.
Remember, you're
near.
I go through thousands of things. Okay, so
yeah, so before that gets submitted to the whole group, this year,
Noah
is going to RDFC, has seen it, and Noah is going to tell about because last year, we all recall how it was submitted. What is this? Why are we doing this? Why is that? This is ridiculous. Not that it's affected me a whole lot.
Make sure here.
Let's
put this one over closer to her. Danny, go ahead.
Anyhow, it's a new inbox, so go ahead and do it.
Yeah, no, it is in the inbox. I just thought that there may be some changes to that. I don't know. If there's edits.
There hasn't been any proposed. That was just a kind of, here's something on paper, what do you think about this, and let's see which way we should go before we propose it as a permanent change. But
yeah,
I can certainly hand it over to Rarisich and send it through the AFF
Mods.
You can't
hand it over to me.
I can. I just did.
I think
look, it's already
written down.
With
the least amount of bias that they see.
Well,
AFL.
Okay, so there's your draft. It goes out. We have this group get back together again to talk about it. Unless there's no concerns, and there's no concerns, it goes into the plan. We're done.
That would be good.
I'll send it out to the task group.
I have no concerns. I'm good with it.
Is that really?
Blank
it's
page?
The exact same language as last year, and you have concerns.
No, yet. The new one, the new language.
Which is the exact same as last year.
For the above, for the high, I didn't know we had that in there last year.
We didn't because nobody wanted to touch that change form. Okay. That's why.
Time
I'm confused. That's okay.
Give him Sorry. Another fat cigar and ask the question in a half hour.
Anyhow, the current draft that you have, that's one I'll send out to the AFF mods and we can discuss it.
And that one was done last year too, just like that. I pulled that up.
All right, so that's a reminder that if anybody has any change forms, they're due by the end of November so they can go into the draft. And then we're going to push Walla Walla to try to have their Appendix A in by January, if possible.
So I think they're due in early November from the core. And then the region has time to review that and propose their...
Well, right. The reason I'm reiterating that is sometimes we have people that want to add their own from outside as well that we haven't already brought to FPOM.
Right.
So just... kind of putting people on if they have ideas that they haven't yet worked with anybody on that we get going.
So you want them by the end of November? Mm-hmm. Is that right?
Yeah, well, to go out in the draft, it sounds like we want them by early November.
Actually, so hi, this is Lisa. I just wanted to clarify the internal core change forms we like to have by November, and then those are all posted, and then external agency change forms, the deadline for that, as well as any remaining internal core change forms, are due by December 15th. And then the goal is to have all of those posted and entered into the draft online by December 31, so that folks have 2 or 3 weeks to review them prior to the FPP meeting in late January. So December 15th is the draft date for change forms to make it into the draft by December 31. Of course, you know, we can usually be pretty fluid after that, but the goal is to get them in by December 15th, if at all possible. And then Appendix A has been a little bit more flexible, just considering that there's a lot of things still in development and undecided as far as dates for studies and whatnot. So I've actually accepted Appendix A changes as late as first or second week of February, but to the extent that we can get those in before the January FPOM, our FPP meeting, that would be helpful as well. But the Appendix A section seems to be a little bit more fluid in terms of how we incorporate those changes into the draft. It's not really a change form per se. We just get sections from the different district planning sections and then insert those.
Well, the issue I think that we're hearing is that we accept that and take it out to the region. We had it in Appendix A. You already reviewed it. This is flat out, we're doing it, and when we don't get it out earlier, then people haven't reviewed it, they're not aware of it, and so you're kind of defeating the purpose of Appendix A by letting it get pushed out.
Well, I think that the reasoning behind that was because Appendix A studies have already been coordinated and regionally reviewed through the FPOM or FITRWIG and AFEP process, so that it's already been vetted, so to speak, and defined by the region as to how it was going to move forward. So that was the expectation that those studies have been coordinated and defined through those other forms, and so it's more of a notification that that's what's going to happen.
So Lisa,
but it's also maintenance work.
So that's where Walla Walla treats Appendix A different than Portland District. Portland District has always treated it as those are the FITRWIG things that have been coordinated. It goes into Appendix A as special operations studies and construction, things like that. And so it already has been vetted, and that's just writing it up and putting it formally into the Fish Passage Plan. Walla Walla, you guys treat it a little bit differently.
Tell us how we do. I mean, yeah, it sounds like something that could be streamlined. In other words, I don't know why if they go out and coordinate a bunch of research, they don't just put it all in, and then if some of it falls through the cracks, fine, but at least it's in, they're doing their coordination right now.
I thought it could be on those items, some of those catch us by surprise, but and it's because of bad memories, usually.
But if you, under each item, put down where and when it's coordinated, simple thing is coordinated that such and such food wig or such and such fall down or such and such a SRWG meeting on such and such date, then the person who's reading it and doesn't remember that they said yes to it could look at that and go, oh, go back to some minutes maybe.
So, I mean, that's fine for AFEP, but a fair amount of our Appendix A, well, is maintenance items. So then Appendix A serves as the coordination. In other words, this needs to occur up front. We're laying out. We have these things throughout the year that are going to have to take place.
Well, Appendix A is always one of those things that comes out, it's draft, and then suddenly it gets final somehow in April, May, or something like that. And then we look at it when something is starting to occur, and say it's in August, and we're like, I don't remember coordinating this, because we may not have. It may have been something that changed as you went through.
It seems like everything we put in Appendix A gets changed down the road.
It does.
So for Appendix A, for maintenance stuff, would it be easier for the region if you coordinated those as separate MOCs for those items so that then you have a document for each item and you can clearly show?
That's the purpose of that process.
Which is not how Walla Walla has used Appendix A in the past. That's kind of what has happened is things that we probably would have put in an MOC, they've put into Appendix A. They're sneaky that way, you know.
Well, it has. My understanding is that if we put it in Appendix A, you know, there's some things that have issues that we would come back out and do a formal MOC, but that Appendix A serves as that coordination. And I thought we borrowed that from Portland.
We only use Appendix A for research and construction that has gone through the Fitterwig or SCT process.
So all your maintenance goes on MOCs?
Correct.
Goes
okay.
On the
that is a difference for
through
us.
Through the MOCs.
Yeah.
And if you want to do it that way, I think then at least for the bulk of your sections of the Appendix A, you should still say it was coordinated and such and such.
Can we do that as part of the FPP review so that if we have our
right.
Chief of Ops at those reviews?
There's things that, that's been
right.
Like,
so if we have
things,
daily
changes.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And then by the time, you know, because the studies and things are always fluid, and they don't really know when they're back in January what how some of these things are going to go forward. And so they change. And then we get, you know, then it kind of comes to us and says, well, we're doing this because it's an Appendix A. And it's like, well, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, it's going forward.
Some of the Appendix A are things we do every year, but kind of give a shot in the dark of when we think it's going to happen, like doble testing, for example.
Yeah. That's a good point, too. Some of those might be better off to be put in the body of the fish passage plan. It's just to, you know, say that it's going to be over.
Well, like the wet stuff that we brought today, sometime between March and May, you know, or something like that.
And maybe you just lay it out there and say that, you know, when you know you will coordinate the exact date, but you don't even have to have an appendix A. It could be in this body of the plan. And then you just, through this form, you coordinate the exact date. If you need to, or if you think it's not a problem to do whatever the date range you put in there is all okay, and it's just up to you guys to decide.
I mean, you know how
you can do that,
right? We always have issues with contracts.
Yeah. So you guys arrange, but we're okay with any of those dates. Then it becomes a non-issue for us. Those are good because we don't
even though we have a lot of people that like to control situations, when we get to these types of situations, because we have people outside of their supervisory chain, there's difficulties. So I think we're probably we'd be challenged to put backup dates and be able to keep to those any better than the original dates.
I think it more just ranges. You know, this work could occur sometime between this month and this month.
Okay.
And
well, do you even need Appendix A at that point? I mean, almost everything
that,
can be done through
MOCs. I put that in the bulk of the body of the plan. And just, it's always that way forevermore.
So I think our messaging maybe that we'll take back to Mr. Moody, who kind of has been heading this up, is that to be similar, we either need to start doing MOCs for maintenance, or when people have a bunch of maintenance they want to put in Appendix A, they need to come to our FPP review and coordinate it at that time,
right,
give their justification.
And then it should change unless you do that coordination.
As an MOC. Yeah.
And maybe that's why we only used it for research and construction, because those were pretty much set. There wasn't a whole lot of flexibility in those.
Okay. So, keeping moving, we don't have any task groups meeting today. We will plan to have a meeting after the November FPOM to kick off our noise issues.
Oh,
so, you know.
Bring your boxing gloves.
Bring your boxing gloves, your ugliest Halloween mask.
Static.
Tape guns.
This is for noise. Jackhammers.
Maybe an audio recording of the adult trap operation at Lord Granite, so we can hear if there's any noise associated with it. that's my latest.
With it dry, right?
Well, we just have to be. Anyway, does anybody else have any comments on task groups? It doesn't look to me like we have anything else that's active other than what we talked about earlier with the AFF.
You need to catch the name for that noise task group.
Yeah, well, right now it's construction caused impacts the fishways, but I would think it should be, it appears, I wasn't at the last Fitterwig, but this has also spilled over into Fitterwig and a couple issues there. And so we expect to have someone from our planning group join the noise group as well. I think Marvin is going to try to participate just to bring that other element in because it's broader. It's what I'm told. Yeah, I guess the key to the closet has somehow been unlocked, and the passion is so overflowing for this topic that involvement is enough of interest.
He was probably in Portland District when we developed Portland District regulations for that, so he should carry that forward to Walla Walla, right?
Well, that's not my impression. My understanding is that we are trying to come to some common ground in terms of some of the concerns that Walla Walla has over additional language at this point.
Well, I mean, realistically, you guys have to bring your case because, I mean, I think it's a fairly simple issue, kind of a no-brainer, really, to me. We're asking people to stay a certain distance away from the ladders during the fish passing season, and if you need to get closer with activities that are noisy, any activities, talk to us. We normally allow things to go forward. It's just a matter of discussing it in terms of impact and time and looking for better ways to do it. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, and so I wish it was that simple. You know, I think the problem is that we don't have some of the geography of a lot of open space at some of these projects that you may have more of down here, kind of stuck in the canyon, if you will.
That's what it comes down to. It's just that if that's the case, then we would talk more often. But we're going to require that. So, I mean, we can talk, we'll talk about it, but at least at some point, maybe it's 2018 buyout, we're going to say this.
And that's fine. That's why I say I expect it to be, you know, in our preliminary discussions, I think the hope is that we try to talk about what we think really has the potential to have influence and get a good understanding of that first. Talk about what we have existing and ongoing that is always there and always has been, what other people bring, and kind of lay everything on the table.
Lay one more thing on there, and that's looking at the history of how this has worked in the Lower River. I don't know how many cases this comes up, it's often, and I doubt that there's any one of those where we've said, no, you can't do it. It's just that there's been some restrictions about night or time of day or, that sort of thing. But we get the work done. So I don't think it's something to be really scared of. It just puts one more layer of
well,
just laying out the history of the past. I mean, that's
as you know, it's a little broader than just our fish group where the concerns are here. We will try to involve, and we just want to kind of step through discussions slowly and involve what we need to from our end so that we can try to find a copacetic understanding a year or two from now.
So I see that. That's good. You know, it's going to be a word. I can walk away forever, carry this load, no problem.
All charters on.
I'll just call them the Marines.
That'll be the history of the future.
You can always volunteer for the whale
voice
stuff.
TDA split flow, that's going to meet again, right?
TDA split flow discussion to follow up as we, so that's a good reminder. Based on some of the discussion that we had today, there will be another task group meeting for the TDA split flow, but we didn't really set a time, so I don't know if you want to have that before November or just have need for an additional meeting, review the data, come up with a trigger.
Yeah, that would be good to review the memo, review the data, check in. And then at one point I thought there was going to be a sockeye fallback task group or subgroup or something like that. Is that something that you can add your own?
I don't remember. Conversation.
Okay. That's something that never got brought here, that Scott asked Trevor to send the memo out to FPOM, that he thought it should be in the FPOM agenda at the September meeting. We never received the memo here. I think Trevor has floated that maybe out in SRWG or something. I honestly have never seen it. Scott has referenced it. He did ask at a meeting. Trevor said he would, but we haven't seen it.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I don't know how well that ties into the long-term upgrades at Granite or whether that's a broader issue, having not seen the memo.
Yeah, that was something that Scott wanted me to ask about was,
is there anything going on with that?
For sockeye fallback or for fallback in general, maybe?
Sockeye fallback.
Sockeye fallback at Granite.
Well, not just at Granite.
Okay, up and down the system.
That was even something interesting where Jeff's chart showing like the bomb tag or A of F cat and fish versus the juvenile and fish had a head slip of this very small
and a lower fall that degrees. Who's pleasure to call that juvenile one?
Yeah, random.
Tag has juvenile versus tag has us.
Which tag tags juvenile a lot more fall that? For some of that, a lot of fish is strange.
I guess we either have to get Trevor's memo or we can maybe ask him in November if there's a need for a task group or something.
Do you want me to add it as a task group? I don't recall ever.
No, let's just, I mean, as a sidebar, let's just. I think that's it for today, folks. Those on the phone that's bared with us, thank you. That was pretty nasty there for a while. And Tammy will be shooting out the minutes. And you can, over the phone, enjoy the fact that we're going to be going over for the barbecue at Robbins Island. Talk to you later.
What's on the menu, Ann?
Roadkill, salmon, beer.
I just got one more thing to say.
That sounds a lot like earlier.
Oh, that was it.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
Bye, Al.
Now we know.
He listened to it long enough that he could redo it.
Charlie.
It's really hard to know.
So, Gary, when are you going to volunteer for the noise and whale assignments?
No,
I'm curious. 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 I